Tonight on The Download, CBS Sunday Morning contributor and author Faith Saley, White Sox great and World Series MVP Jermaine Dye, and live music from the band Impulsive Hearts. And now, here's your host, a man who dreams of flying with the pigeons, Justin Kaufman.
Doesn't everybody have that dream? Flying with the pigeons? When they scurry?
They scurry just a little bit?
They fly for like maybe a half a step and then they come on back down. Nobody? Just me?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, life is a pigeon. Just being able to find your food, pretty much when people throw things away from the corner bakery. Then you get chased a little bit and you fly for just a second and you land, do it all over again. Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Thanks for being here. I'm honored that you're spending some time with me tonight. Got a great show lined up for you to make it worth your while. Coming up this hour, is it Veep or is it real? That should be the new game that we play. Is it Veep or is it real? Every day on the political campaign trail, it gets harder to tell. We'll talk about the big push for Indiana tomorrow and what Carly Fiorina brings to the party besides balance issues. I don't know if you saw her fall off the stage today. It's good stuff. It's Monday, so we're going to bring a touche, our look at national politics. Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson in for Chris Roebling. We'll get at each other later in the hour. Also tonight, the big James Beard Awards party is underway at the Civic Opera House. Will Chicago bring home the bacon? We'll check in with Chicago Tribune food reporter Louisa Chu later in the program. She's live at the event. My guest tonight at the big table is CBS Sunday Morning correspondent and author Faith Saley. Faith's new book is called Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. It's a collection of essays examining her need for approval and how it went above and beyond the average human being. We'll talk about the concept and why approval is such a negative concept in our society coming up at the big table after 8 o'clock. Also tonight, one of my favorite baseball players of all time, the World Series MVP and Chicago White Sox slugger Jermaine Dye joins me to talk about his career in Chicago. Pete can attest to this. When we started this show a year ago, that was one of the guests I had on the list where I was like, I want to talk to Jermaine Dye. I always thought he was fascinating as a White Sox because, you know, they brought that team in to play small ball, and he was that sort of, you know, prototypical slugger. And even in that season, he had a quiet season throughout. He had a great year, 20, 28, 29 home runs, but he was never the focal point of that team. You think about that 2005 team. And then the World Series, he just took off. And then we never think about it, but the years after that, the 2 years after that he stayed with the squad, maybe two or three, he was a monster. He hit 44 home runs in 2006. I mean, it was amazing. And then, like I was saying with Roe, tremendous way to retire. I mean, Kobe Bryant does the every stadium tour and gets a boat, you know, gets the sweatshirt of every team that he's beaten. Jermaine Dye decided he did not want to come back for a lesser salary. Essentially, there was that move at the around 2010 where Major League Baseball essentially was like, we're not paying millions for right-hand hitters who are over the age of 35. And so he and a lot of players of our youth were kind of shuffled to the wayside. So we'll talk with Jermaine Dye about his career later in the show. All right. Tonight we're going to play the worst. Simple game, really. You call up, tell us what's the worst. We give you free stuff. I'll start. You know what's the worst? Diet soda. I know it has no calories, but come on. Nobody likes that stuff. It's terrible. It's like drinking battery acid. We drink it because we're addicted to drinking something and we don't want to get fat. Even though fat is better than cancer. I mean, what have we done? Diet soda, the worst. Or you know what's the worst? People who say, out, please, when they're trying to get off the train. All right. You know what? We don't care. If you can't make it to the door, evolution has spoken. You can't get off the train. I don't. You don't get the right to say, out, please. So it's the most passive-aggressive thing you can do at rush hour. Oh, this guy. Oh, he said, please. He said, out. I should get out of the way. Also, live music tonight from the local band Impulsive Hearts. We got a huge show tonight, so let's get it started. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. and I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, why don't we start it off with the carryout? Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Well, tomorrow is the Indiana State primary, a primary that could be big for Donald Trump, which is why Ted Cruz is all over the state. If Trump wins, he could get the necessary delegates to end this thing once and for all. But what's the fun in that? Indiana, do your duty to keep this clown show going. On the Democrat side, nobody's buying tickets to that clown show anymore. Hillary's like the Russian lion tamer. She's just about got Bernie Sanders to roll over and balance himself on that ball. But Bernie roars once in a while and inevitably goes back in his cage. And then the dirt bikes do a bunch of figure eights in that caged ball of death. And the acrobats flip up. You know what? I lost the metaphor. Sorry. And if you missed it, political candidates spent about $22 million on the Illinois primary election. $22 mil for one state's primary. Nah, I don't think we got a problem with money in politics. Nothing to see here. Move along. It's all good. The state medical marijuana task force met today to recommend changes to the state program, but folks on the board are calling out Governor Rauner for routinely ignoring their recommendations. Like, for instance, they want more black lights, louder speakers, more space in the state fridge for edibles, and a digital copy of Big Lebowski. Come on, Governor. Come on, man. It's easy. We love Lebowski. Puff, puff, give. Puff, puff, give. Couple of stories for the old no-duh segment. The Trib reports that millionaires gave Mayor Emanuel sports tickets and possible rides in private jets. I'm shocked. Rahm doesn't fly coach? I would think he'd be like the guy who likes to sit in the middle. And sports tickets? Wait, the mayor doesn't pay for sports tickets? Let's be honest here. Half the crowd at a Bulls or a Cubs game doesn't pay for those tickets. They might as well just say, hey, thanks to Bank of America, every time there's a game. And this story, too, the former United Airlines CEO got $36 mil as a severance package. Last time I checked, that was normal, right? I mean, when you got laid off, you got what, $15 million? Oh, wait, at least 2 weeks' pay, right? How about 2 days' pay? How about a Starbucks card? No? At least you got to take your stuff. You didn't get to take your stuff? Ah. Yeah. Anyway. Speaking of Starbucks, a Chicago woman went to great lengths to get into the newspaper. She's suing Starbucks for putting too much ice in their iced drinks, therefore getting less coffee. You know, you could just get naked and run through Daily Plaza, and they'd put you on the news, too. But as a former barista, I will say that at least she did not order the Frappuccino. I hated making those. You got to blend all this stuff. Don't order those. Whatever you do, unless you want to torture the workers. That's my May Day message for you. Don't order the Frappuccino. In real estate news, you know when you read the apartment listings and it says steps from the L? Well, I guess more and more developers are scooping up apartments closer to transportation and jacking up the rent. That means if you don't have money, you can't live by the train. Wow. So if you live in an apartment like the one in Blues Brothers, now that's a sign of wealth? It's 2016, man. What's next? You pay a premium for cockroaches? Man, you have the coolest rat and roach problem. You're so elite. In weather, what was that yellow thing in the sky today? That blinding ball? It's a sun? Sun? Whatever it was, I like it. In sports, Draft Town is gone, disassembled. It's like it never existed. It's almost like Detroit. Come on, that was low. By all accounts, the Bears had a successful draft, getting some defensive help at safety and defensive end, and getting the guard of the future in Colin Whitehair. Great offensive line name. I can hear Gruden now. Look at Whitehair grind. What a pancake block. Holding, number 77. Can't put your hands up like that, Whitehair. The rookies are in, and that means that the Bears quickly moved to cut two veterans, guard Matt Slauson and safety Antrell Roll. Roll took a parting shot at the Bears, saying that the facilities were terrible, the worst he'd ever been around. That plus the fact that Soldier Field looks like a ATV rally by November. Maybe it's time to look at what's going on there. Maybe get a new gardener? Maybe change up the seeds? I don't know. Sunlight, water? I don't know. I don't know how it works. The Cubs are in Pittsburgh tonight for a road trip as they continue their quest to best middle school Fridays with Crazy Suit Day. It's so fun and so fourth grade at the same time. This is a big showdown with the Pirates, who are in second place in the Central. Hayward's getting the night off because he's in a slump. 0-17 recently. Man, and they still have the best record in baseball. Come on. The Sox have the night off after a wonderful 5-2 road trip. They return for a set starting with the first place Boston Red Sox tomorrow. So get ready for every fan to post on Facebook, yes, I got tickets to see my beloved Red Sox. I hate it. I hate when the Red Sox come to town. Am I the only one that feels that way? Ugh, it's annoying. Almost as annoying when the Yankees come to town. But still, same thing. Or when they play the Cubs. When the Yankees play the Cubs. Oh, God. Calm down, everybody. It's one baseball game in May. And finally tonight, Navy Pier is getting a new hotel. Not a bad idea. Actually, I would go further. I would break the pier off from the mainland and just have it be called Navy Pier Island and have it completely separate from Chicago. Then tourists could eat Bubba Gumps and churros and ride Ferris wheels forever, and we'd never, ever, 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 never, ever, never, ever again have to go there. Oh, yeah, they do have the McDonald's of the future. Never mind. Dumb idea. Well, that's the carryout for May 2nd, 2016. Hey, here's your drinks. We put the lids on really loose, you know, because we're sadists. Coming up, we'll get you updated on the campaign trail, find out what's happening as the race for the Indiana primary. It's to the last few hours here. Also, coming up 8 o'clock, Face Saley and World Series MVP Jermaine Dye. It's the download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right, coming up after the news, Touche. Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson in for Chris Roebling, who was out of town. Rob Martier, how was the weekend, buddy?
It was fine. How about yours?
It was good. It was good. A lot of rain.
I know.
A great story about my AC unit, which I'll tell later. That is perfect for the worst. It wouldn't click on, and then this weekend I wanted to go up on the and take care of it and see why it wasn't working. And like, it rained all day Saturday, and I was like, this is how I die. Because it's up on the roof. I'm like, this is it. As I'm like getting pelted by rain as I'm trying to find a restart button.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Yeah. Not me, though. I'm crazy risky like that, man. I'll get up on the roof. No, come on. You're absolutely right. I probably could have waited a couple days. But
yeah. Yeah. You don't need to go on the rain for that.
I'm Bob Villa. Bob Villa.
Bob Villa? Villa?
Bob Villa. Villa.
I think it's Villa.
Well, I'm the Bob Villa version.
Well, he would definitely go out in the rain.
He would.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So there you go. See, I did make sure I was Bob Villa for a night. All right. Well, I'll tell you more about that story a little later in the show.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what you said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right, you go right.
All right. You know, when you hear that, it's time for Touche, our weekly look at the campaign trail during this presidential campaign. The big questions: will Indiana be the final battleground for both parties as victories from the frontrunners could end talk of contested and brokered conventions? Or will the addition of Carly Fiorina to the Ted Cruz ticket bring balance back to the campaign trail? You see what I did there?
I do see what you did,
and
you see that I saw that, but you noticed that I was deliberately trying not to mock you for that
right,
one.
Right, right, right. It's too cheap.
I will mock Dave. I feel like on the Touche segment, this is Charles Lipson, that Dave tonight can be the Touche.
Oh.
And I'll just be the yay.
That's right. The regular panelists for this are Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. Dave is here. Chris is out.
Dave fled the country. Chris fled the country.
We welcome University of Chicago political science professor Charles Lipson to the Thunderdome. Charles, good to see you, professor.
Good. Where was I drafted?
Where were you drafted? Yeah.
You were drafted in the 147th round, Charles.
I see. Okay. All right, well, it was that bong photo that brought me way down, you know?
Really, it really was.
Yeah.
All right, so big state for both parties tomorrow. I mean, I don't know if we really saw that Indiana was going to be that big of a deal, but it seems like maybe it's just the rhetoric that every time primary comes up, we're like, this is it, this is the one, and then we get the same results, and, you know, some delegates here, some delegates there. But at the end of the day, is Indiana Is this the possible end to this madness?
Well, there's ending, and then there's ending. I expect tomorrow to be an ending, Justin. Look, the both races are over. They've
That's
been
right.
over.
That's right.
Donald Trump has mathematically eliminated all his competitors. He's actually now on his way to getting the magic number. Hillary Clinton needs, I think, 35% of the votes, although only 19% if you include the superdelegates of the remaining votes. The race is over. It's a shame that Bernie Sanders it's like he concedes, he throws out nice warm fuzzies, and then he comes back and says crazy stuff like he did yesterday when he said, no, unless she gets a majority out of the pledged delegates, then it's a contested, and it's not a majority because number includes supers.
You got to remember, he's not a Democrat. Right. I mean, in other words, when people make the claim, let's bring the party together, he's not in the party. The Democrats decided to let him run as a Democrat. They didn't make him pledge any of the things that you saw all around on that. As for it being over, this is increasingly looks like that Monty Python film in which the knight has his arm whacked off and he says,
it's a mere flesh wound.
It's a mere flesh wound.
I have said the exact same thing. He's exactly right.
I swear to goodness, this is Kasich, you know? It's a mere, I won Ohio. I mean, yeah, it's your home state. That was normally considered a 3-foot putt. I mean, and now what we've got is a 3-foot putt.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, it's kind of early to be saying who the running mate's going to be for Ted Cruz to stay Carly Fiorina. I mean,
desperation.
I was going to say it's like he's not even in the mix.
Well, I want you to know, Justin, that for my Academy Award victory, I've already got you on the guest list. Actually, both of you are coming, so Ted Cruz naming his Veep.
I'm having a Native American come up and accept the award for me.
For you. Yes. But we're planning. This is just the same kind of planning that Ted Cruz has done.
This is actually, for Trump, the issue of running mate is both more important and more difficult. It's more important because he has these gaping demographic holes, which are to say most of the electorate. You've got women, Hispanics, you've got all kinds of groups. Now, he will appeal to some groups of Democrats that normally vote only Democratic, but I think he has a big problem. The problem he'll have in picking a running mate who helps him with those groups is that right now, at least, the top running mates don't want to be associated with him.
Well, I was going to ask, with Indiana, I mean, just because you see Ted Cruz, I mean, it's getting to the point where he's losing arguments to Trump supporters. I was listening to the news today where Trump supporters are getting him going, well, you know, is there a point before the convention that he will concede, or is he really going to go into the convention? Are they going to hold all the delegates? And more importantly, is this sort of what the Republican Party wants to do?
Ted Cruz is practicing his inner Egyptian and saying denial is not just a river in Egypt.
Right.
look, Ted Cruz is demonstrating with each passing day how truly unlikable he is as a human being. I saw him yesterday on Meet the Press. And Chuck Todd, who's normally pretty unflappable, and he doesn't get agitated with people, Chuck Todd was getting his dander up because Ted Cruz wouldn't answer the most basic question of, yeah, I know, but if you lose, are you saying you're never going to do it? You have two choices here. No, I'm never endorsing Donald Trump, or we'll cross that bridge
because
later.
Because he wants a price for the endorsement if he makes it at all. And
the prices will let you in the country.
I tell you, he does have a problem with likability, but I think the bigger problem was that he had very carefully planned an outsider's run in what he knew would be an outsider's year, and Donald Trump
took
that lane. There was no room for any other car to pass him in that lane, and Cruz made a fundamental decision, which is a mistake. He decided that the heart of his campaign would be his religiosity and social conservatism. And but without all the warm, good feeling of Mike Huckabee. And Huckabee went nowhere, right? So you've got to ask yourself, and it's, you know, and every so often his father comes out, and his father is kind of like Jimmy Carter's wacky brother and Hillary Clinton's wacky brother, and he just, whenever the father comes out and says, you know, essentially Jesus is already registered to vote for him, you know, then it alienates other people.
Right, right.
And that's Charles, the Republican on this panel that's talking here, too, I might add. Ted Cruz, you know, Ted Cruz occupied, you're right, you exactly nailed that. Ted Cruz occupied that lane. Chris Christie was going for the bully lane, and it turned out that there was a car in two lanes, and his name was Donald Trump.
Well, let me ask, I mean, right. We'll go to a break here in a second, but, you know, the president made the joke in the White House Correspondents' Dinner about, you know, people, fish, or Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
Like, there seems to be a movement to draft anybody but Donald Trump. Is that not going to happen?
It's done.
Is the Republican Party going to get behind Donald Trump?
No. What the Republican Party hopes is that either if Hillary is not indicted, that she's a one-term president and that nobody on the Supreme Court dies.
By the way, that's how you know Charles is a Republican, because he throws the indictment in there.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
Well, I do think that the issue of the indictment was much more lively several months ago, and I think it's an injustice, really, and I'm speaking as a Republican here, I think it's an injustice to the democratic process in America that the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party can't say this is resolved in some way. There's either an indictment or there's not an indictment, or my aides are indicted. I think the idea that the FBI is working without a time schedule is really walking over.
That's always unsettling in any form when any government agency is like, we'll take our time. We'll tell you when. That's I don't like that either.
Yeah.
We'll let you know in October.
Charles Lipson's a political science professor at the University of Chicago. Dave Lundy, a Democrat analyst, and what else you want to call yourself?
President of Aileron Communications.
There you go. That's good.
Husband, dad, you know. All around great guy.
He's a bicyclist.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Touche here on The Download.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
Well, that's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
Touche here on The Download. In studio with me, Dave Lundy and Charles Lipson. We're playing Touche. It's every Monday here on The Download. All right, so two things I'd love to talk about is, one, as we sort of size up the front runners, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. That's what it's going to be.
He's taller.
You know, what's the forecast? I mean, the prediction for the campaign. I mean, is this going to be a campaign that's going to be super nasty, that will go down in the history books as the worst ever? Or, you know, are we going to see a different kind of campaign where hope and change, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's going to be a different kind of campaign, but I would be shocked if there's anything positive in it. Trump is going to do two things. He's going to run on the economy. We got troubles, and I'm a jobs guy. And he's going to run. He doesn't even have to run on the outsider. It's now so firmly imprinted on him. What he's got to do is have some torpedoes against Hillary that hit below the waterline. She's on her route to win this one unless he can damage her so fundamentally.
Like with scandal kind of things? Like that kind of thing?
Trump's shots below the waterline are the reason that he's so disliked among women. I think that...
he's got to be careful in that regard, right? I mean, he can't just go...
Yeah,
he's really got to make sure
the hallmark of Trump is careful.
Look, last Tuesday, he demonstrated the problem, okay? He had his victory speech, and he wasn't presidential, and he wasn't, you know, he resorted to lying, Ted, and all that. But he was okay right up until those last 3 minutes where he couldn't help himself, and he launched into the, if Hillary was a man, she wouldn't even get 5%. And then he launched this whole diatribe, and women just recoil at this stuff. I mean, the interesting thing is, when you look at Trump's negatives among women, they're still rising. We don't know what the ceiling is.
terrible.
They're at 70%. I thought that when they hit like 60, 65, that was it. But no, no, no.
Nobody
they
left.
They keep going up. It's, well, politics is a game of addition, and Donald Trump is trying to demonstrate you can subtract
and win. But he keeps winning the primaries. I understand that. Yeah. But is there any way that you know, as the general goes on, that he is a more favorable candidate to groups like women, to minority groups, things like that?
Look, no.
The short answer to that is, it's not that he's going to become more favorable. He's got to do something that really damages her, which is to say she's already damaged herself in some way that he's going to bring out. I've got to tell you, 2 years ago, you can remember those ready for Hillary, as if there was going to be some enthusiasm. There was zip enthusiasm. I met with lots and lots of people who were the core of her demographic. That is, they were liberal Democratic women of Hillary's age cohort. And they were for her for the most part, but they were not enthusiastic.
Not energetic.
Now, those same people are coming up and they're not saying, "Will you vote for Hillary?" They are saying, "You can't vote for Trump." I swear, it's very common. The other thing that I noticed, now granted, Trump is not making a play for the demographics of people who hold professional jobs in the city and so forth. But I know lots of Republicans. I literally don't know anyone who has told me that he is definitely voting for Trump.
Yeah, and you know, you hear that from the Republicans and in the establishment here in Illinois, where they're withholding. They come on this show and they're like,
and they're petrified about Mark Kirk and the people who are running in iffy districts like in the North Shore. They're just petrified. Well, you live there, David. What do you think?
It's not remotely iffy. No, Trump is going to get trounced in where I live among Republicans. But here's the thing, and I think this is important to keep in mind. All the division within the Republican Party, the division within the Democratic Party, and the notion that those folks aren't going to come home is somewhat overblown. Because at the end of the day, most Republicans are going to vote for Trump. Yeah. They're going to hold their nose and they're going to say, "I'm not voting for Trump. I'm voting against Hillary and for the Supreme Court." I think a larger portion of Democrats are going to do the same. But you have to think about, where is he going to get the votes?
The real sadness of all of this is that Trump has tapped into some very fundamental things. Middle class and lower middle class people are really hurting. Their income has gone down, not up. People are outraged that people can come into the country illegally. These are not necessarily people who are against immigration. They're against illegal immigration. And on college campuses today, you can't even say the word illegal. If you say it, it's considered a microaggression. Those people are holding their hands up. And they're saying that the Democratic programs that have been running for 50 plus years and cost $20 trillion have not solved problems like Baltimore and Ferguson, and we have no talk in this campaign from the side that has backed those about what they're going to do.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation, obviously, Touche, every Monday here on The Download. Charles Lipson subbing in for Chris Roebling this week, University of Chicago political science professor. Great to have you. Thanks for being here. Dave Lundy, as always, the better half of Touche.
Wait a minute. No, not the better half. Hey. Wait a minute. Everything.
Let me type that on Facebook for Roebling, who's overseas to go.
This is
liberal media bias.
Dave, Charles, great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
See you, Justin.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, journalist Faith Saley is an approval junkie. From grade point averages to beauty pageants to first husbands to the television industry, Saley has lived a life of trying to win the approval of others. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Saley is a journalist, writer, actor, improviser, and television and radio personality. You can see her regularly on CBS Sunday Morning and listen to her as a panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Her new book is a collection of essays titled Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faye Saley, welcome to the big table. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Do I look okay for the radio?
You look great.
Okay, just checking. Thanks. No. You know what I love is you called it my new book with emphasis on new, as if I've written many. And
what's
this
your
is
first
my
book?
First, too, so it just sounded cool. Thank you. Maybe that's auspicious.
I really liked the book, and I enjoyed it. It was very personal. As a humorist and as a, you know, you've done a lot. You've been a comedian, stand-up. But this is, I mean, you're telling a lot about your personal life, your stories, your relationships, sex.
Lactation. My mother's pelvic floor is in
exactly.
there. You really read it.
I really read it. But was it hard for you? Because you're always putting yourself out front, but this is a different kind of personal.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, on CBS Sunday Morning, I do commentaries, but they are... Usually, I think the topics are fairly innocuous. You know, I'm championing the word whom, or I'm suggesting people don't shake hands, they fist bump so they don't get sick, right? Although I will say that it's amazing. People will find a way to write hate mail about anything.
Yeah.
I'm like, you guys, it's just my opinion on the Sabbath. But you're right. It's not so personal as a commentarian. You know, what I commentate about is not so personal. And this is very revelatory. But I have to say that was not, it was not difficult to reveal that stuff. Maybe that's part of my approval junkiness. I really like sharing stories. I mean, the reason I wrote the book is because I got to this point in my life where I had so many happy endings, not in the dirty way, unfortunately, but so many big questions answered. I was in my early 40s. I still am. And like the big questions, will I fall in love with the right person? Will I become a parent? What should I be doing with my life? Where should I live? All of those questions were finally answered. I think people who are probably smarter than I am answer them in their 20s or 30s, but I had finally answered mine.
That's doubtful.
Really?
I think that a lot of what you read in here, and it was funny because right before we started, you know, you said that I'm not necessarily the target demographic when you're talking about this book.
You aren't, right.
But I really felt connected to it and related because... seeking approval is something that's human. I mean, it is this concept that we all want it. Obviously, we're in the media, so you want it. You want people to like you, this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But there really is around approval. There really does seem to be it's a relatable concept.
Right. But I think you're very honest to admit that. You would be amazed at how. So when I was writing the book, and what are you working on? I'm working on a book. What's it called? Approval Junkie. And some people are like, really? I wouldn't have thought that of you. You seem so confident, or you're so, you know, successful. And it's not, like you said, it's human. It's not a matter of being insecure. I mean, wanting validation is like a basic human need. And I have little kids. My kids are 1 and 3. And you see that if you're a parent, like you applaud them when they eat their vegetables. And at some point in our lives, we're supposed to graduate from not only needing that, but enjoying it. And I don't know. I kind of wanted to write, these essays about the lessons I've learned, but I also kind of wanted to do a little defense of seeking approval. Like
right.
a big, fat high five feels good. I like the sting of a high five.
Well, you kind of call out early on in the book, you call out some of the celebrities like Kanye West,
who's
like, I don't care. Or when someone says, I don't care.
They care
lying.
The most.
Right.
They care the most. You know, there's like that spectrum. There's the Kanye West who tweets that he doesn't give an S, you know.
Right.
About what people think, and is constantly in Twitter wars. And then you have the famous Sally Field moment, right? Like, you like me right now, you like me. And that, I actually, when I was working on the book, I went back, because, you know, it's a trope in our,
right.
You know, people always say, you like me, you really, really like me. I went back to see it. It was in 1985. It was sort of Places in the Heart, she won the Oscar. And it's really moving. It's not just cute, it's moving. People in the audience were crying. And I think it's because of what you said. Seeking approval is resonant. And by the way, this is not a prescriptive book. This is not
right.
a self-help book. These are extremely unique stories.
These are your essays. They're humorous. But they do tell your story.
Right. But I doubt, for example, you asked your gay brother to demonstrate the best
right.
way to give a killer.
No. Not do that. But.
Or, you know, wore a sequined miniskirt ordered from the Avon catalog to win your high school beauty pageant. But, like you said, there is one hopes for some universality among the themes.
Well, approval or validation, I mean, like you said, it's a human need. But at a certain point, I mean, there it is in balance, almost like the idea of addiction. I mean, you call the book Approval Junkie, but,
yeah.
but the concept that it can get out of whack where it almost drives your life. And that's what you're talking about early on, not even just about being excelling in school and having to get great grades, and you had such a great academic career, but also like in Hollywood, which is where approval gets... That's where
brutal.
It starts to get really hard. And then in our relationships. So there's a lot going on here, but it really is about making sure that that's kind of in balance.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the book is about my evolving relationship with approval. Evolving, I hope. I call myself a recovering approval junkie because I still have approval, but it's been a journey in figuring out from whom is it worth seeking approval. And that list has dwindled. So yeah, if you're a performer, you want it from audience members you've never met. You want applause. You want laughter. When I was an actor in L.A. for a decade, you want to be cast, right? You want people to think you're the prettiest or the skinniest or the funniest or whateverest. And now, you mentioned two shows I work on, CBS Sunday Morning and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I was a massive fan of those shows before I ever got on them. So when I get good feedback from my colleagues, from my bosses, that feels fantastic.
Feels good,
it's
right?
worth winning their approval, right?
Right.
It's the ex-husband, I call him my husband, whose approval right. I could never really get. It's not worth trying to get his. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm just far less promiscuous in seeking it. But also, it's, you know, the root of approval is that word prove, and I love proving stuff to myself. Now, that has evolved, too. Am I trying to prove to myself I can weigh 95 pounds like I wanted to in high school? No.
But it's interesting because grades were a big part of your life, and you're a Rhodes Scholar. Looks,
you've been on the phone with my dad,
right,
I can tell.
Right. But looks, I mean, there's a great essay in here about really seeking out to be the beauty pageant winner. I mean, Miss Aphrodite.
Aphrodite,
right.
Yes.
But there was that element of approval where, you know, didn't go right the first time. You're like, it's almost sometimes mistaken for hard work or perseverance, but you really wanted to win that thing.
I really wanted to be the goddess of beauty and love. 1989. I don't mean to brag. Yeah, no, I did. It was, and if you who are listening are surprised that a public high school had a beauty pageant right. for its girls every year, then you were probably on the chilly side of the War of Northern Aggression. Right. This was important, right? The boys played football, and the girls wanted to be Miss Aphrodite. It was like, as soon as I got into high school, I want to make straight A's, and I want an A for Aphrodite. So I entered every year. And I chronicle my journey towards that tiara, which I still have.
And you know, that's great. It's interesting in the story because every time you're reading one of your essays, you're thinking about the approval junkie kind of mystique that you're talking about. And in your life, you were already in commercials. You're already moving. You were doing stuff down in, was it Atlanta?
Yeah.
Downtown Atlanta. And you were in productions.
Like a kid actor.
Yeah, while the other kids were doing the sort of normal high school stuff. So the beauty pageant wasn't just about being the prettiest. It was about letting people see you and then having them validate you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because all the other kids in my school were doing normal, you know, what you should be doing, like cheerleading and playing in the band. And I was leaving to go sing, you know, neutered versions of Sondheim downtown because I was one of those kid actors. But, you know, I give a ton of credit to my editor. I like to tell people this. My editor, her name is Suzanne O'Neill, and she edited Mindy Kaling's book and Jim Gaffigan. And I love saying that because it's sort of like, if you like their books, maybe you like mine.
It's like a walking
Amazon.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That's right. But she kept encouraging me to dig deeper. So this chapter that I write about winning my high school beauty pageant, I thought, come on, this is just fun. This is my Napoleon Dynamite chapter. Like, do we really need to dig? What's there to dig for? And, you know, I realized because she was, the question was, why do I still tell people that I was Miss Aphrodite in 1989? Or why do I still have a tiara from high school? I mean, it makes me like a character in a Tennessee Williams play, right? Just hanging on to my youth. And yet I realized, you know, I do have a wistfulness about that particular episode in my life, because my senior year when I won this silly high school pageant, I had these two goals, right? I wanted to captivate the student body. I wanted everyone to see what I could do. And I also wanted to lose weight that year. So
right.
I lost 45 pounds. It was, you know, again, immoderate, right? We're talking about that. And it was, I think of that episode in my life, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, even if you don't have a tiara, that it was the last time I felt like I could get what I want. I could achieve these goals, which at that time were captivating the student body and dominating my body, by hard work and determination. And I feel like that's a faith that belongs to the young, because you learn soon enough that working hard and wishing hard, they don't always
right.
get you what you want.
But,
you don't always get a crown.
End up fulfilled or you're left feeling empty.
Yeah.
That's a big part of this book.
Yeah.
Faith Saley's my guest tonight. The book is called Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and more with Faith. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, Faith Saley. You can catch her on CBS Sunday Morning. And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
It is a big table. Your listeners should know. This is a literal name for this segment.
The book is called Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. You know, before the break, we talked about your editor. And your editor pushing you to go deeper than just the sort of ironic stories, I won Miss Aphrodite in 1989.
Right. Or I had eyelash extensions.
Right. It's a great move for the book because it's, you know, it's expected because of your background and because of your work on CBS Sunday Morning, and even Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We know you to be humorous. We know it to be fun. What you really do as you peel back is a much more thoughtful, philosophical look at life. And I think that's what makes this book work.
Thank you.
I'm curious, when I asked about being personal at the top of the interview, was it hard to go deeper? Was it hard to go past just the humor and what you're used to writing?
It was only hard in the sense that sometimes I didn't know if there was going to be something there. So I'm very glad she prodded me. Now, there are chapters. So there's a chapter called The Exorcism because my ex-husband, and a real nadir. Is that how you pronounce that word? Some people say nadir.
Yeah.
A real low point in my marriage.
Just go straight to the definition.
Right. Suggested that maybe I should consider having an exorcism.
Because you were depressed, because it felt like you weren't in sync early in your marriage.
Yes. And by that time, we had actually been together for a long time. We did that brilliant thing where we got married because that would probably fix our relationship.
Right.
Yeah. Then we should have had a baby right after that, right? That would really fix it. But I was so far gone into some darkness then that I was actually, in a way, flattered by his suggestion that if maybe I had, because he said, I feel like there's some darkness in you that you can't control. Maybe we could get rid of it. And he wasn't joking. And so I sort of wanted to demonstrate my open-mindedness about self-improval, right?
Yeah.
Willingness to improve myself. And I was like, oh, I guess I'd consider it. Now, I did not have a literal exorcism, but I went to this healing place that my sister-in-law suggested. And I was there, as is my wont, to like crush enlightenment. I was going to, you know, dominate in yoga.
I was going to be approved.
Right. I was going to have an out-of-body experience if there is one to have. And of course, that doesn't happen when you try to like grasp spirituality so hard, it will elude you. And so I thought I will write a funny chapter about that because, hey, isn't it crazy to have your spouse ask you if you would consider having an exorcism, and let's take it from there. And then I realized in writing it that there really was an exorcism that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a metaphorical one, but I went to this healing. It's an Ayurvedic healing center that's like ancient Indian, the system of balancing your body. It's a lot of oil on your third eye. And I did this thing called Kaya Kalpa. And when I arrived at this healing center, I thought, well, what do I need to surrender? I need to get rid of my fear about my career and my marriage ending. And I need to get rid of anger. I was resentful towards my husband. I was resentful towards Hollywood for not casting me. And I was presumptuous about what I needed to release. And it turned out that I needed to release a profound amount of grief because my mother, I was in my mid-30s and my mother had died in my 20s. I knew consciously I was extremely sad about that, but I didn't realize that I had been holding on to the grief about my mother dying, and I'd sort of made it the story of my life, that I wasn't letting myself be happy because somehow if I were happy, that would diminish the loss of her. So this chapter, to your point,
it started off as a joke, but it went deeper. And you're right, because not only that, but there was the part about your husband and taming, and then there was the part about your mom. I mean, but that seems to be what the takeaway is from this book, is that there are things that we hide or push away and that we don't think about. And maybe we're thinking it's this problem, but it's this problem. Or maybe we're thinking because of the fact that we're just consumed by approval, whether it's in our relationships or whether it's in our jobs, and we're not really paying attention to the things that are actually holding us back.
Yeah. Here's where you're definitely not my target audience, but there's the penultimate chapter in the book is about breastfeeding, which I call Breastfeeding Sucks. And I did sort of wonder why I didn't love it. Some people love it. They breastfeed their kids till they're bar mitzvah, right? But I did sort of wonder why I was doing it well into the second year of my daughter's life. And of course, you get in our culture right now, you get a lot of approval for that, right? Like you're making your kids spontaneously speak Mandarin if you breastfeed them, right? I was doing it while I was writing the book. And I sort of decided to dive into why am I still doing this if I don't love it? And I realized it wasn't just about approval. It's clearly not about my daughter's approval. She's not going to remember. Or societies or my own, it was because motherhood is so tough. And I was seeing it as a sort of a metaphor for motherhood, like keeping bonded to her. I was afraid to lose that bond. Like, who am I as your mother if you don't have to turn to me to keep yourself alive in a way?
But it also was revelatory in the way that motherhood is kind of the way that you've been able to, I want to say, recover. You're not an approval junkie because your motherhood has changed your perspective on life.
You are so right.
That's how the book plays. No, you're right.
Well, thanks. But I mean, nobody has sort of stated that as explicitly. And you're a dude. And I think you're even a hetero dude. And like, so thank you for such a intuitive and close reading. Right. I mean, I start out the book with this thing that happened to me when I was an actor in LA, where I went to this acting guru who was supposed to help everybody like nail your auditions, and I read my lines for her, and it was like, this is like 10 years ago, it was $130 for a half an hour. Well, it was 25 minutes, and that's like $4,000 today, right? And I read my lines to her, and she just sort of cocked her head kind of compassionately and concerned, and I thought she was going to say like, wow, why aren't you a massive star? Like, you don't need to be here with me. And yet she said, why aren't you as pretty as I want you to be?
And you took that to be, okay, I got to really examine. But
yeah, well, and then her, I was thinking, and at that point in my life, I was thinking, oh, why aren't I as pretty as I want me to be? That's what Hollywood will do to you. And so, I was worried she was going to tell me I had to become a Scientologist something. And she's like, you need bangs. You need bangs. And I was like, bam, like what a prescription. I can do that. But as I was leaving this $130 session, it was like an afterthought. And she was like, you know what? Do you have kids? And I said, no, I was in my mid-30s. Of course, in your mid-30s in LA, you're auditioning to play the mother of middle schoolers. Right. But I did not have kids. And I said, no, I want to. And she said, this woman who had never met me before, she said, you know, you have this hardness about you and this desperation, which was true. I was desperate. League competitive, and I was trying too hard. And she said, you're going to have kids one day, and I think I'll see you again, and you're going to be softer, and you're going to be happier, and you're going to know what's important. And I've never seen that woman since, but you're right, Justin, because you get to the end of the book, and my kids are, in a way, what has saved me. Because if you're a parent and if you seek approval from your kids, that's just masochistic. I mean, you just need to make sure they're happy and healthy, right?
And maybe it draws out a little bit of, you know, when your approval metric is out of balance. When you're with your kids, you're like, oh, you know what? I don't need to really worry about approval at this point.
It focuses you, right?
When you're a parent, that's what it does. Approval Junkies, the book, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faith Saley is my guest tonight, journalist and television radio personality. You can see her as a contributor on CBS Sunday Morning and a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Let's take a break for the news. We'll come back more with this conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Faith Saley. Her first book, Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. Faith, of course, is a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and also a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So you come through Chicago to do that show. Continuing to talk about this concept, and I really like the concept, the idea of almost being addicted to approval.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about tonight. That's what the essays in the book are about. And it's really honest because as we sort of began this conversation, it's a human necessity, yet we almost see it as a weakness. It's weird that like we will say, oh no, I don't need anybody's approval.
Right.
I'm on my own. I don't need anything. But that's almost like denying a fact that we do need some, but sometimes it's too much.
And it connects us to each other, approval. You know? I mean, you know how you give star ratings to your Uber drivers?
Right.
Do you know that when you get out of the car, they rate you too? They do. And if you get a bad rating from your Uber driver, you're not going to get picked up, my friends. Not in the rain and not in the cold. So there are many good things about seeking approval. Like, it's okay to make straight A's or write thank you notes or know people's names. But one nice thing about seeking approval sometimes is that it does make you engage with people, makes you listen to their stories. And if you want someone's approval, you probably ought to connect with that person.
You have a chapter about moving your career from being an actress and trying to get into sitcoms to working on the other side where you're actually hosting programs and working in radio and interviewing people. But that taught you something that helped with approval, which was listening.
Yeah. I mean, you know this well. Not only did my career take a huge turn when I became someone who listened rather than talked, but it changed my life. I mean, becoming a good listener is... I think a lot of people think they're good listeners, but really what we want to do, because we're human, is share our stories. Okay, so you tell me yours, and now I'm going to tell you mine. Oh, that happened to me. Let me tell you mine. And if you listen as a job, it forces you to be quiet. Like, my job when I was interviewing people was not to interview a politician and then tell him what I thought. And when I let that sort of seep into my life and had interactions with, say, my now husband, you know, if we didn't agree on something, if I could remind myself, this is his time to talk and this is your time to listen. It's not your time to wait to interrupt, you know. But also, you find out that when people really feel like you're listening, you can ask them anything. And I don't mean that in an exploitative way. It's like a superpower. It's right? You know this.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I always go away from a conversation where I did far more listening than talking, feeling like I learned more and much more fulfilled. Like, one of my favorite moments was when I got to interview Joan Rivers. I've interviewed lots and lots of people, just like you have. She was a machine. She always delivered the funny, and she you could ask her, you know, anything sort of crazy. But I very sincerely, because I think I earned her trust in an interview, I said, are you ever going to think you're pretty enough? You know, because she usually has one-liners right. for everything. And it was a really nice, honest moment. It made me sad, actually. She was like, no, I do this because I don't think I'm ever enough. And right. of course, this was this amazing icon of a woman.
Well, it's hard because approval, it really does play and plays a big part in the role. And we know this, people who get in front of cameras, get in front of audiences, who have success with that. And then there's also the side of people who have less success with that have to go through the audition process. And you talk about this in the book, about walking into these stone cold rooms yeah. and having this this constant evaluation of your career every time you read a line. But that whole thing, that has to mess with your approval metric. I mean, just the concept of always being evaluating,
but
always
don't
being judged.
Everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
Even if you're not trying to be an actor or stand-up comedian, nowadays, much more so than a decade ago when I was acting and auditioning, it's social media. It's like instant judgment all the time. And if people say they don't care about approval, believe me, they're checking their likes. Oh my God, I got retweeted, therefore I am.
That
you know what I mean?
When you put up that picture on Instagram and nobody likes it. Everybody knows that feeling.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't
Nobody
change your
anything.
World or anything, but it's just that, like, that emotional feeling that you have.
Well, it's sad like, trombone. Oh. Yeah. And you know, they say, I host a show on PBS, and my co-host is, and we interviewed scientists about movies. My co-host is a scientist. She's a neuroscientist. And she was saying, your brain literally, you get little hits of dopamine all day long when someone responds to you on social media. It's validation. Yeah. I mean, we're on a diet of it.
So we've found a way in our society
to turn us all into approval.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually an epidemic. This may not be prescriptive, but it's at least warning us of a world that we live in. You know, like I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, it's very personal. You have a whole section about your first husband, the husband,
mm-hmm.
but about, you know, he was in the business. He was in Hollywood. It was tough. There's a, you know, somewhat heartbreaking passage where he writes a role for you.
Oh my gosh.
And then it gets cast. It's like right out of a like just a bad show where you're just like someone else got the part.
He created
a role for you.
Right.
And
my name is Faith. The role was, I mean, the character was called Hope, and I still didn't get it. Anyway. Yeah.
But talking about that and around Wilson. But the other part of it was, you know, at 40 years old, trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And you go through this and you talk about some very emotional stuff with miscarriages and going through the treatment, going through the IVF treatment. For anyone who has done that, knows the mental and emotional trauma.
It's a lot on the partner and both partners.
not just the, you know, the waiting to see if it works, but all of the injections and
the
visits and everything. It's emotional torture. And that too, as you try to apply what you talked about, that idea of like, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to work hard to get this done.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just out of your control.
Yeah, absolutely. That chapter, thanks for mentioning it. I think it might be my favorite chapter. It's called Ovary Achiever, an Approval Junkie's Guide to Fertility. And what I loved about it is, like, if my children read nothing else I've ever written, I feel like if they could read, I'm going to get emotional. If they could read that chapter, they would know how much I wanted them. I wanted them my whole life. I just didn't know how they would come to me. And I also love that chapter because this is how life is. It is the very funny, like the fact that when I was doing IUI, which is artificial insemination, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't want my husband to have to take things into his own hands. I was going to be like, you know, I'm approval junkie. I'm the best partner ever. Like, we're going to have sex and collect your sample in a cup, and I'm going to walk it to the doctor. Like, I don't want you in a room with some disgusting sticky magazines. So, you know, so I had this vial in between my very small cleavage because that's like the best temperature in a running bra. And I'm like race walking to my doctor across Madison Avenue and I bump into a friend. I mean, I didn't literally, but I didn't slosh genetic material on him. But, you know, and I had to like make small talk when I really wanted to be like, I've got to go.
I've got
my
something.
My future children are between my breasts. I got to get to the doctor. But like really, and then my husband's motility, he was like, I think his sperm count was like 33 million, which of course I texted my family immediately.
My dad
called him 33 mil for like years, like his son-in-law was a rapper. And there's so much funny in that process that bumps up against the desperately sad, the babies that I lost.
Right.
And that's, I love that I could combine them both in that chapter. And the chapter begins, my second husband, my first date with him was the night before I started the process of freezing my eggs at 39. And so, you know, the next day he was texting me like, hey, what are you doing? You know, what are you wearing?
I'm in
a hospital gown in my orientation for freezing my eggs.
Extracting my eggs right now.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Which, of course, by the way, I did for CBS Sunday Morning. Like, I had the cameras there when they did the egg retrieval. And, yeah, I put on makeup because, you know, I'm purple junkie.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say. I mean, that's like there's, I mean, even the emotional and personal stuff that you've had to go through your life, I mean, even then you are sharing it with an audience.
Yeah,
you want them to write in and be like, Faith, you go get it.
Look
you know?
At those.
Yeah, look at that.
Your uterine lining is so thick.
Well, it's a great book, a collection of essays. It's
Thank
called
you.
Approval Junkie, Adventures in Caring Too Much. The author is Faith Saley. Faith, thanks so much for sharing your story. And thanks for coming on the download.
Thank you.
It.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Faith Saley. That was great. It's so true. You know, we all want approval. And, you know, Faith's book is very funny. And but like we talked about in the interview, I really liked how it took on a topic that, yeah, we can all laugh off, but they're like any drug, like anything, approval is becoming, especially with social media and everything, an epidemic where, you know, we don't exist unless we're approved. And that has some effect on our society at some point.
I got really mad, literally really mad that on Instagram, you know, I got married a couple of weeks ago and I posted a wedding photo, which I thought personally was a really nice wedding photo.
Yeah,
like 18 likes. And then I post a picture of like my dog, 48. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, man.
I get really upset at that.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, it's interesting. Approval Junkie. It was a great read. I recommend it highly. For people to, I mean, because it's also about, it's about a life. I mean, if you're going to, like we talked about in that interview, man, Hollywood, I mean, they do things in the, I know it's hard because people don't care necessarily about what actors have to go through. But, you know, I have to say, like, it's just inhumane. Like, everything about approval. Imagine going into those rooms and in the book she talks about, you know, who's in front of her and who's behind her when it comes to, an audition.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is who they think I am. Like, it was like an older star, you know, and then maybe it was like Victoria Jackson from SNL days.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know. And then you get in there and they give you no approval. Like, when you go into an audition, a lot of time the producers are stoic.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit there and they won't give you the approval. They don't, that's against the rules. So you walk out not knowing if you did a good job. You got to wait for a phone call. I mean, it just messes with, like, your humanness.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
It seems like it would.
I would hate to go into a room seeing a bunch of me's, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like you said, like, this is what Hollywood deems I am.
Right.
You know, probably a grandfather at this point now, you know? Like Faith was saying that she's, like, when she goes, she's 40 or something.
Right.
And she goes, he has mom, you know, she's the mom of, you know, 20-year-olds.
Right. Everything's out of whack. I have a lot of friends. I mean, I'm 42 years old, so I'm close to Faith's age, and I have a lot of friends who I came up with, you know, and a lot of them have been on the show, but, you know, you're right. I mean, they end up getting cast for weird things that they aren't, meaning you're going to be pretty soon it's going to be like, you're going to be the grandmother.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be ready for that. Like, you're going to be the grandmother friend of Reba on Reba McEntire's new show. I don't know if there's a show. I'm just using that as an example.
She used to have a show. I don't know if
it's the best. Don't get me started.
Bow, bow, bow.
Best theme song in the history of theme songs. to get a Reba McEntire song to be the theme song of the Reba McEntire show, it's the greatest. And I don't remember the lyrics because I really had a whole thing for this, you know, but it's like, I would find it at some point. It's like, it's essentially the plot of the show. She's like, it's single mom who works too hard. She gotta pick up her kids and try again. I'm a survivor. That was the Reba McEntire theme song, and you're like, oh, that's so cool, man. That's a good hook.
We used to watch Gilmore Girls on ABC Family, which came on, you know, whatever, at 11 or something, and then at midnight or something, Reba would come on. So we'd always catch Reba, and I don't remember the theme song.
The theme song was the only redeeming quality of the show. The show was pretty, I mean, she's pretty funny. I'm going to be honest, as a country music star to turn into a sitcom actress, she's pretty funny. But, you know, it was none of the stuff was like groundbreaking in any form. But the theme song, it was like a Reba. Yeah, look it up. It's like a country music. It's like a 20-second version of one of her hits. I'm a single mom who drives a car, and I'm a survivor. You got it? Yeah, here it is.
My roots are planted in the past, though my life is changing fast.
It brings me to tears.
Who I am is who I want to be. A single mom who works too hard, who loves her kids and never stops, with gentle hands and the heart of a fighter.
I'm a survivor. See? Wow. I did not think tonight would be the night that I would bring out my love for Reba McEntire. Thank you. Thank you, Pete Zimmerman,
You're welcome.
Yeah, I love that song.
Want to say for the record that I'm worried about both of you.
All right. There's something there. There's an emotional, I don't know what it is, but like I think it's the harmonies. It's something about that production, but it gets
getting
like,
you?
It brings a little butterflies to the stomach and like it swells the tears in the eyes. I don't know why. Maybe it's the hopeless romantic in me that I want to be close to Reba McEntire. I don't know.
Why were you watching Reba?
Because it was on the CW or something at the time. And I think, I don't know, same thing I think with
something
you.
Something like, after a Cubs game, you fall asleep, you'd wake up and Reba's on.
I just remember my roommate at the time and I were super into the idea that she writes the plot of her show and sings it. Like, there's something funny about that. Like, you know, like, what if all shows did that? Yeah. Right? I'm living across from my mom. It's everybody doesn't like me, but maybe they do. It's everybody loves Raymond. You know, something like that. But he's not a singer, so it's harder. But the idea that she could put that production, they stepped that Nashville production up. Mm-hmm. You can hear the twang and the reverb and everything. She'd be great, man. We get Reba McEntire on the show.
Yeah, I'm sure.
She's around. We do the worst, but we should do guilty pleasures. Because one of my guilty pleasures would be Reba McEntire. I don't know any song she's ever done in her life, but just her in that sitcom with that theme song. And I'm like, oh, I love Reba.
Guilty pleasure, though. I like it.
I really love Reba. Who do you love? That's what this is. Who do you love? Reba McEntire. So when she comes to town, we can do that. It's almost like with Janet Davies. Like, I was, you know, I really love Janet Davies, and she came on the show. That was great.
Let's work. I'll get, I'll.
You'll look, find where she's at.
Your birthday's like in August or something, right?
Mine?
Yours, yeah, somewhere around
there. I thought you said Reba's birthday is in August, right? I'm like, how do you know that?
No, but I'll try to arrange it something, or maybe I'll have her come in, surprise you around your birthday. Come up in a cake.
Can we get her to do an acoustic version of what the Downloads theme song would be? It's a radio show that starts at 7 and talks about a bunch of different things. Coming up next is Jermaine Dye, Justin Kaufman. Right. Coming up, I'm going to talk to my favorite baseball player, Jermaine Dye. A texter was texted and said, Dye doesn't deserve my love because he didn't take less money to continue to play. Because I had said earlier on that, you know, Jermaine Dye was making a hefty salary. And then he ended his contract with the Sox, and no one picked him up because they didn't want to pay whatever it was, 12, 14 mil or whatever it was for an aging right-handed right fielder.
I just want to tell that texter one thing. World Series MVP.
Exactly. And
that's all you need to know.
That's all. I mean, that was amazing. It was amazing to watch the feat, that being done, to watch at that time and those teams. Because that White Sox team, if you remember, they didn't have, they had Pauly Konerko and Jermaine Dye. Frank Thomas was out. He was hurt. The rest of the team was a lot of small ball. And so when Jermaine Dye came up in that World Series, he was hitting that ball into the gap. He was had huge plays, huge plays. The leader on that team. The next year, he had 44 home runs. Yeah, and he didn't want it. Just but I reminded the texter that that's how sports is now, because Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, they didn't take less money. The Bears wanted to lowball Brian Urlacher. Remember that? And he instead retired because he's like, I'm not going to play this game that I love. But it also takes a huge toll on my body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to play it for less than what I was getting last year. It doesn't make any sense, fiscal sense, just because you're lowballing me. I'd rather retire. I'm rich. Right? Anyway.
Work on my hair.
Right. He's got hair. That's right.
I can't. The billboards. From a distance, he's kind of got a Jeremy Piven from Entourage look, like on those billboards. Like, you look up, I'm like, oh, an Entourage. Nope, that's a Brian Urlacher hair club billboard. Very strange. Very strange, those billboards. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the Chicago White Sox have had a recent history of starting slow and finishing strong. And that's usually not a recipe for playoff baseball. So this year, the Sox answered the call and have started fast. As a matter of fact, this is the best start they've had in about 10 years. Well, one of the men who was a part of that squad 10 years ago, the same squad that won the World Series in 2005, is one of my favorite baseball players of all time, Jermaine Dye. He grew into his role as the heart and soul of the 2005 White Sox, and not to mention the years after where he put up monster numbers, including 44 homers in 2006. Well, he's going to be back in town this summer for his golf outing. It's a second annual Celebrity Golf Classic to benefit Fresh Start Caring for Kids Foundation. It's a two-day event that will be held on June 19th and 20th at the Indian Lakes Golf Resort in Bloomingdale, Illinois. Jermaine Dye, welcome to The Download.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Let me just start. I mean, you know, how important is it to start fast? We've heard so much about this. The Chicago, I mean, we were talking about this at the beginning of the season, that the White Sox in the last 10 years have not started fast. I mean, for you as a baseball player, how important is it to jump out of the gate?
It's definitely important because you want to get off to a good start, not only for yourself, but to kind of take a little pressure off of you and not, you know, go into a season pressing and trying to, you know, especially coming to a new ball club. I remember myself coming to Chicago in 2005, and, you know, you want to get off to a good start for yourself, for the fans, for the team, for the club, to show that they, you know, made the right decision in bringing you over to the organization. So for the White Sox this year, you know, having a lot of new faces, and for these guys to be able to gel right away in the start of a season, it does wonders for their ball club. And there's no doubt they've turned things around. I think the strongest point would be on defense, bringing in some guys that can catch the ball. And, you know, with some acquisitions on the pitching side, I think they're winning ball games right now on their pitching and defense. And it's just a matter of time for their hitting to kind of click. You know, it's tough at the beginning of the season in Chicago. The weather gets a little cold, the bat tends to feel a little different in your hand. So for them to be off to a great start right now, I mean, it's good to wake up in Chicago and have good baseball going on from actually both sides,
yeah, right,
of the city.
I'm fascinated because when you came to Chicago in 2005, Ozzy was selling the Chicago White Sox as a small ball team. They were a team that was going to move runners base to base. Scotty Pasetnik came over. For you as a power hitter coming into the Chicago White Sox, did you have to change your game to be a part of that system? Did you have to think differently about how you were as an offensive player?
No, not me. I think that was what was good about Kenny Williams and Ozzy and that organization. You know, everybody kind of talked about the small ball, but, I mean, that's baseball. That's the way you play the game. That's how you win ball games, is doing the little things to win games and having players that are unselfish and disciplined enough to do whatever they can to help the team win. And for me, that's always been the type of player that I have been. You know, I've been a guy that drives the ball from gap to gap, focuses on hitting the ball to right center, hitting doubles, and will sacrifice on getting runners in from third base, hitting a ground ball, moving runners over. So I didn't really have to change my game to gear towards what we were all about that year. So for me, I mean, I just felt like it was just going to help me. I mean, Scotty Plesegna was going to get on base and someone's going to move him over, Iguchi, and then Konerko, or somehow I was going to have more chances for RBIs playing that way. And it was a benefit for everybody.
Obviously, the World Series team, the only World Series Chicago has seen in modern history here. You know, you were the World Series MVP. You and the Chicago White Sox shocked the world in the way that, or at least shocked Chicago, in the way that you were just consistently proving doubters wrong throughout that whole playoff run, even into the World Series. There were questions about the Astros and the Killer Bees, but you guys were able to dominate. What does it mean for you, thinking back 10 years to that World Series, 10 and a half years now, as being a part of that World Series team? What comes to mind when I ask you that question?
Well, I think just it's a dream come true. I mean, we always want to go into our dream as a kid is to make it to the big leagues. And then once you make it, you know, it's all about winning that ring. And what I look back most on that club in 2005 is we were a family and we did a lot of things together away from the field with our families than any other teams that I've been on. I mean, we constantly would get together for dinners every road trip. We'd have at least, you know, 15 guys with us at dinners. Even after that season, in the off season, we always got together. So, you know, I think it was more about the family and you know, what we didn't have any too many cliques on our ball club. So, you know, we all trusted in each other and we believed in each other. And I think it showed that season.
You know, obviously you went on, I mean, the 2006 season was tremendous. I mean, you have 44 home runs for the squad. But talk about Chicago and the White Sox fans' reaction to you. I mean, after winning the World Series and even the next year when you were a dominant offensive player, I mean, what was that like? I mean, walking down the street on Michigan Avenue in Chicago, I mean, people recognize you, Jermaine Dye. What was that like for you being a World Series hero?
No, it's great. I mean, anytime you can win in a big city and do the things that we did and accomplished, true fans appreciate that. And Chicago is a great sports town, and fans are knowledgeable, and they appreciate teams winning in Chicago. And to me, there's no other better city to play in as a player from whatever sport you play in. And for us to accomplished that, and I look back at the parade and the following year, still to this day, you know, you still have people coming up saying, you know, how they appreciate us winning, and you know, they were happy that their dad or their mom were able to see a championship before they passed on. So you will really appreciate the sports fan in Chicago, and it's just been great. It's a great accomplishment. And but going into 2006, you know, you win a World Series. Now you have that target on your back. And, you know, every series, every team that you face, you know, you're getting their best because they're trying to beat the last year's world champion. Yeah. So it's fun. It's great competition. And that's what you set your goals out, you know, at the beginning of the season, is try to win that ring.
Well, the next couple of years, I mean, the team was good. You guys didn't get back to the dance, but it was exciting to watch the home run pop that was coming from you and Paulie and Jim Thome and everyone that was playing there. But let me ask you, because after the 2009 season, you became a free agent, and then you had a hard time picking up with teams at your contract. And that wasn't just you. I mean, there were a lot of veteran right-handed outfielders who were kind of on the waiver wire, who a lot of teams decided to go smaller or to go with rookies and change. And there really wasn't a market for players like you, and you decided to retire in 2011. What went through your mind, you know, retiring in that way, not having the sort of Kobe Bryant go from, you know, stadium to stadium, and instead do it the way you did it?
Well, the thing is, I had certain things that I wanted to, in my mind, where I wanted to play. You know, I have three kids, and, you know, anytime – you know, you start getting towards the end of your career and you start thinking about the kids, you want to start enjoying them a little bit more. So with me having 14 years in the big leagues at the time, you know, it was something that I had to make a decision on, and there were not that many clubs that wanted my services. And I said, you know what, I'll just wait it out. If somebody gets hurt, you know, I'll stay in shape. I'll continue to be ready. And nothing ever came about. So I decided to just take it to the house and enjoy my kids and my family and do it that way. So I never was going to be that guy where I wanted to, you know, stay in it to have a team rip, you know, rip a jersey off my back and say, you know, and get released and all that. So I always wanted to go out on my own terms, and that was okay for me.
Well, you're bringing the golf tournament back. I mean, this is the second annual in Bloomingdale. So talk about what it means to bring it back and to be here in Chicago, to have a presence in Chicago as a Chicago White Sox.
It means a lot to be back in Chicago and to continue to do some charitable work in Chicago. It's where I won a World Series at. And I've always been involved in different charities that involve children. And that's something that I pride myself on, is trying to get involved with the youth and hopefully give them something to look up to me as a role model. And for me to have a charity event, Fresh Start Caring for Kids Foundation, it's nothing like giving these kids a fresh start in life and seeing a smile on our face after they come out of surgery. And just to be able to, for them to go to school and not be looked at different and not be talked about and having kids joke about them. I mean, it feels good to me, and I really, really love doing that for the kids.
Well, Jermaine, you're a Northern California product. I mean, you played with the A's, you played with the Braves, played with the Royals, other squads. Do you consider yourself first and foremost a Chicago White Sox?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely played with other organizations, but being able to, you know, win a World Series and still do a lot of things with the organization, I consider this my second home. And, you know, it's just one of my favorite cities that I've ever been to, and I enjoyed my time here.
Well, the second annual Celebrity Golf Classic, which benefits the Fresh Start Caring for Kids Foundation, will be held on June 19th through the 20th. At the Indian Lakes Golf Resort in Bloomingdale, Illinois. My guest tonight, Jermaine Dye. Jermaine, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
It's Download here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up next, the worst. So excited about this. Sean Flannery from Blackout Diaries and Mike Polino from the Hi-Hat Club are going to join me to be the judges, the guest judges, celebrity guest judges, just like America's Top Model. Judges. Let's go to the judges. So we got some great stuff to give away tonight. I'm telling you, man. We have a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern. I'd want to say that as much as I possibly could in a European accent. Bayern. Is that right?
I think that sounds good.
Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July
27th. I think 27th. It's Munich.
Oh, it is?
No, it's Munich.
See the world's best soccer back in Chicago and one of Europe's fiercest rivalries at Soldier Field. We got a pair of tickets for that. Also, we got a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. Actually, you can meet Wendy Snyder and join her for an exclusive after-hours special showing of the Kitchen and Bath Showroom grand opening on May 12th. And we also have a pair of tickets to The Producers, which is playing through June 26th at Mercury Theater. Come on!
That's amazing.
Just for all you got to do is text 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? When the guy in front of me has got his left-hand turn signal on. That's the worst. And you may get one of those things.
That one probably will not win.
Yeah, we've had that one before. I got a good one. So, real quick story. You know what's the worst? When your AC unit is broken,
mm-hmm.
you call a guy out, and then when he shows up, it's working.
Oh, what?
I know.
Well, you're not an AC guy, so you don't really know what's wrong. So what?
I had to. So when it was really hot, it's not, it was like a week ago when it was really hot.
Yeah, that Monday.
Yeah, I turned it on and it didn't fire. Like the actual unit on the top roof deck didn't. It didn't fire. It didn't mm-hmm. spin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, no. So I called up Four Seasons. They came. They said, okay, we'll put something on. It was not. I got lucky because it was only like 40 degrees the last 5 days.
Yeah.
So I didn't really go crazy. Like I was like, you got to come out. I'm like, we'll work it out. So over the weekend, I had to Google, right? Google what to do. And they're like, before the person comes out, you should check this, check this, check this. You check the circuit breaker. There's a restart button. There's usually a breaker into the house, you know, that kind of thing. So I did all that stuff, like I said earlier in the show, like in the rain, like a total jackass, you know. I couldn't do that on a Friday. I had to do it in the rain. So anyway, I did that stuff, and I was like, and nothing worked. Didn't work. So Monday morning, they were coming out. That's this morning. And right before this morning, I turned on the AC unit, like, or the thermostat that, you know, that started up so I could just get, and I cleared, like, the door to the furnace.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I'm being a nice guy for the Four Seasons guy, you know, like, I get everything ready. And I'm like, something sounds loud outside. And I kind of looked out the window, and it's spinning.
Huh.
It's working.
No.
And I'm like, the guy called me, like, you know,
I'm
awesome
on my
courtesy
way.
Thing. Yeah. That's like, hey, my name's James, I'm on my way. I'll be there in 30 minutes. I'm coming from the south, you know, it's traffic. So I'm like, oh, man, I feel like such a jerk that I'm like now going to call him and go, all set, all clear. Like I'm Han Solo in Star Wars. Nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Weapons malfunction. But he was great because he came anyway and he expected it. And he did the Freon and he did everything. It was really nice of him to do that. And there was nothing wrong.
No, it was just for why.
I have a couple of phantom switches in my house. And I think, like, Christmas Vacation when they can't figure out how to do the lights on the outside. Mm-hmm. I think it's something like that. But and I've only had the house for about a year. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what went wrong. It just didn't. But now it fires. And every time we tested it all morning, all day, I even did it after the fact, you know, to go up there and look and see, and it's still working. And everything's fine. And so I thank Four Seasons for coming
that's
out
nice.
and not being jerky to me.
It's good. I mean, it's
they
good.
He should have been like, really? Really, dude?
I
came from Joliet. Are you serious?
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He was like, he was totally cool. And he's like, hey, man, you should be happy that it's not like a, he said, not a, like if the compressor goes out.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, we're all, yay, I got to come over, but that's not good for your AC unit.
Do you feel as a man, you know,
it's
emasculated?
It's the worst
that
feeling.
That you don't know enough about
right.
air
that,
conditioners?
Right. That, number one. And secondly, it's the worst feeling that I think somehow I fixed it, and I don't know how. That's the worst feeling. So it's like I did my man stuff, you know, on Saturday. I went out.
Yeah,
I did it in the rain.
Yeah, oh,
I was pressing buttons and pushing stuff around. It wasn't working. So then I felt emasculated. I'm going to call this guy. And I don't know much about AC.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd stand behind him and go, is it the compressor? What's going on? You know, why is it not spinning? Well, it was spinning last year. It's not spinning now. So there's a little bit of that. So there's a little bit. It's weird because in one hand, I'm like, I feel less emasculated because I fixed it somehow. But at the same, on the other hand, I'm like, I don't know what I did.
Yeah.
And I really do truly think like there's a phantom switch somewhere that I hit. So that's the worst is calling a repairman. And when he's on the way out, you realize that whatever was broken is not broken anymore.
You kick in the AC.
Yeah.
And break it. And pull it. Just like pull a plug, pull some wire.
Looking, just pull a wire out of the starter.
Oh. That, totally miss. I was looking over that. Totally missing that.
Or pull it out, and then when he gets there, be like, did you check the wiring? Ah, that's what I would have done. That's what I would have done, yeah. All right, coming up, the worst here on the download, 312-981-7200. We got great prizes. Phone and text us your worst, and Sean and Mike are going to be here to help out, and we're going to have some grand old time.
What's going down, y'all?
All right, it's the worst here on the download on WGN 720. Very excited to get to it, our weekly segment where we complain and bemoan about the worst things around us for prizes. 312-981-7200 is the number. Give us your worst. And if you make the top three tonight, we're giving you serious loot. We got tickets tonight to the soccer match between the Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. How about that? We're not messing around with the number one tonight. That's a big deal. I want that one. I want to go to that. The number two is a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. That's not bad. Just for texting in what you think is the worst. I think we might be doing too much in our in the sales department here. And also number three, a pair of tickets to see the Producers now playing at the Mercury Theater through June 26th. So all that coming up today, 312-981-7200. Joining us tonight to help with the festivities are Sean Flannery from the Blackout Diaries and Mike Polino, owner of the Hi-Hat Club. Gentlemen, great to have you here.
Thanks for having
us. For having
the Hi-Hat Club has become the place to go for comedy shows in Chicago. Tell us a little bit about it before we get into it.
Oh, well, we serve Creole Italian food, like New Orleans Italian food. We have live music and comedy almost 7 nights a week. All sorts of stuff. Really, if it's an American art form, we have it. also, we have cocktails. A lot of Malort.
It's on Irving, right? It's the old. Is it the old Catarina's
place?
Yeah,
Catarina's.
Yeah,
exactly. 1920
That's
West
a great
Irving.
Place.
Yeah.
Man.
That makes me respect you so much. There's so many people that never even noticed that place, but yeah,
it was
amazing.
A jazz place. It was.
It was very small Greek jazz place. Yeah.
And Sean, tell us about the Blackout Diaries.
The Blackout Diaries is a comedy show that takes place at the Hi-Hat every Saturday at 8 p.m. where stand-up comics plus everyday Chicagoans, postmen, teachers tell true drinking stories with photos from the events.
Great.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun, and the audience can ask questions. The audience can share their own stories. And it was once described on Yelp, and I think this is the best review possible, as a reverse AA meeting.
always strong. Yeah. Always strong. All right, 312-981-7200. Bring in our producer, Pete Zimmerman. This is his time to shine. He loves it. he hates everything. What's up, Pete?
Hey, Justin.
All right, so why don't we start as we do every night. The traditional start is with Pete Zimmerman. He'll start us off. What do you got tonight, Pete?
Justin and I were off last week, so I was traveling. Mm-hmm. And when you're in an airport, you often see a lot of horrible things.
Horrible.
The worst is when people rush to board.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That is the worst.
Where are you going?
You know what? That is so true. That's like I remember just we traveled at the same time. I was so annoyed at how people were lining up 25 minutes early, in no particular order, though it was I was on American Airlines, so it was by one,
it wasn't
two,
even
three.
Southwest.
No, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, and I thought, oh, I got to get to the back of this line. This must be group one. Group one gets called. I'm like, you guys, any of you guys? And they're like, no, I'm three. No, I'm four. Why are you standing in this line then? you're just antsy to get out of wherever you're at?
Yeah, like it's Black Thursday and they're trying to get a TV or something.
It's totally ridiculous. That's a good one. That's actually, steal that one from someone from the texters. They should know. 312-981-7200. All right, Sean, let's go to you. What do you got?
Well, my worst, and this is one that I feel all Chicagoans probably agree, is I would say Chicago bicyclists have finally surpassed Chicago drivers as the worst human beings on earth.
Scoundrels, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just like infuriating. Every day I walk to my day job and I see a Chicago bicyclist just run red lights at like 50 miles an hour. And I know it's like the most hateful part of my heart, but one day I just want to see a car hit him.
especially the divvy ones, though. You know, the divvies are the worst.
Yeah. Well, those guys are almost excused because they're just tourists who are confused
don't have a helmet on. They don't know how to.
Seem so confident and happy, you know?
I think that's an aloofness that they don't know
there is. There is something. Today is a great example. I had this happen right here downtown where I had my headphones on and I was on Michigan Avenue and we were about to cross, right? And you have to follow the laws down here.
Sure.
Like, there's no way to not because you'll get hit by a car, right?
Yeah.
And the white light goes on and everyone starts to walk. And these two bikers just
come through.
They just come through. Like they come through the pedestrians on Michigan Avenue. Like I'm a biker. I don't pay attention to these things. And like there was three or four of us that just whipped quick, like our whole head, like, what are you doing? And they stopped, like, oh, sorry. You're like, so I totally get that.
Yeah.
Like the idea, I'd say the worst is bicyclists who believe there's no rules whatsoever.
Oh, of course.
It's lawlessness.
Well, especially the sidewalk bicyclists.
I
clotheslined one off his bike one time.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of years ago. It was a bit of a
like
fiasco.
I'm laying down the line.
I'm walking down the street and they're like, whatever. Because it was nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
That probably causes more trouble.
Yeah.
Then it's confrontation.
It was super rewarding, though. You know?
All right, Mike, what do you got?
I really hate vodka.
Vodka is the worst.
It's the worst. It's the tofu of alcohol.
Oh, that's so good. That's
because there's no point. It's like, what's the definition of a good vodka? It's an odorless, flavorless spirit.
I'm writing that down right now.
So nobody actually likes vodka.
Yeah, yeah.
They like whatever the flavor is, which means you don't like vodka.
It's an indirect way of saying I hate the taste of alcohol.
Right. I just want
to get drunk.
Drunk.
Yeah,
you know, like
just
say I want drugs.
Yeah,
just go shoot
yeah.
heroin. Like it's that's really more of the point.
Yeah,
you're just doing it to get messed up. Like, and so admit that, though, you know?
Like those people that supposedly teenagers dip tampons.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard this?
That's
I think I can say
next
this on radio.
Yeah.
They supposedly dip
vodka.
Tampons and vodka and then put it up their butt to
their
get drunk.
Yeah.
That's and a thing?
Supposedly it's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, how bad do you want to get drunk?
That's, yeah, there's easier just, ways to get drunk.
And you
than
just
that.
Reduce it down to the pure drugginess of it.
I agree. That's
right.
That's interesting. Like the tofu of alcohol.
Yeah. Well, it's
I,
like,
I think we
what
win.
What kind
that
of vodka do you have? The odorless, flavorless
right.
kind.
Right.
What do you want? How
and
much money
get, like,
do you want
a,
to spend
a vodka
for no
and soda, and you're like, this is, tastes like absolutely nothing.
Right.
Like this is like, it's not even
yeah.
water. It's,
yeah,
it tastes
yeah.
worse. Like yeah. it tastes more of nothing than water.
Like Coke that was just left out for too long.
Right. And I was just over at my brother's house, and he had to. For vacation, and he had vodka, and I'm like, oh, do you have tonic? He's like, tonic's bad for you. I'm like, are you kidding me, man? I'm like, he's like, the seltzer's
yeah.
the new thing. And I'm
yeah.
like, come on, I'm not having this conversation.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm out.
I'll take a little
That's
bit, a little bit of sugar. All
yeah.
right, let's go to the line. Let's go to Kevin. Kevin, you're on the worst. What's your worst, buddy?
My worst is I had to work on a vehicle that was towed into my shop that I have, mm-hmm. and it was a mortician who traveled from Missouri to Wisconsin and transported her body back.
Oh, wait a second.
Well, his vehicle broke down, and there was a dead body in the vehicle at the time in the casket, and we had to fix a fuel pump in the vehicle.
Cool.
That's the worst, being a mechanic when you have to fix a Hertz.
Well, it wasn't a Hertz. He had a, like a Chevy Astro van. So there was a casket in the back of it, and this is a guy who wore a... He had the full garb. He looked like the old, from the Poltergeist movie, the black trench coat.
Wait, so are Astro vans like hearses in Wisconsin then, though?
He had the curly mustache and everything.
Really? I'm not sure he was a mortician. He might have just told you that.
Yeah.
He might have stole the body. Who knows?
Yeah, right. Kevin, that's a very interesting the worst. It's a little bit unrelatable, I will say.
But just to know that there was a dead body in the casket, because he told us this. He goes, we got to... Keep the door shut, blah, blah, blah. No, go in the bag. There's a body I just transported from Wisconsin. We're burying it down south.
Wow.
Do you check the body for jewelry while I was in the shop, though, or something?
Yeah.
And he was there the whole time watching, making sure that nobody opened the doors, what was going on.
Wow. Well, Kevin, that's a good one. All right, I'm going to put you on hold just so we can get your number, because that's got to be in contention, just the idea of a... Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the idea of working a mechanic when you have to work on a car.
Anything
with a
special
dead body
we should know about the car? Well, there is a dead body inside the vehicle.
Don't open the back door.
Yeah.
Okay, 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst tonight here on The Download. Sean Flannery, Mike Foligno with me. We'll do some more right after the break. Stay with us. It's the worst here on The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. We're having some fun tonight. We've got a lot of great prizes to give away. We've got soccer tickets. We've got a gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet. We've got a pair of theater tickets to the producers now at the Mercury Theater. We got it all tonight. Joining us in studio, Sean Flannery from the Blackout Diaries. You can see his show every Saturday night at the Hi-Hat Club, which is owned by Mike Foligno, who is also in studio with us. Mike, Sean, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let's go to some of these texts and see what we got, because I got a lot of people texting in. Let's go. This is Jennifer. When you're texting with a friend, I always start with, it's the worst. When you're texting with a friend and you're already having two different conversations because of the lag, then your friend drops a bombshell and you have to delete everything you just typed because it would be rude not to respond to that right away. That's so true.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's a good one, Jennifer.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah.
Well, I just do it anyway to be a jerk.
Yeah.
That is good, though. I like that, Jennifer. That's. I see Pete already writing that one down. He's like, oh, that's good. Okay.
I had a lady once who I was like, oh, I'm out. I'm here. Like, you want to meet up? And she says, no, can't tonight. I'm composing boo. She then sends, my dad just died. I hit send on boo.
Of course.
So right? There is this real-time Discord, that could cause awkwardness,
It's a little awkward. Did you still go out or no?
No, I did not meet up with her.
Just want to get the end of the story.
Yeah,
okay. All right, okay. Let's see. It's the worst when you get pulled over. This is 630. When you get pulled over for speeding and you're waiting for the cops to bring your license back because maybe he's in a good mood, then two more police cars pull up. That's the worst.
Oh,
that is true. That's what you're like, if you're trying to get a relationship with one police officer and you're like, things are good, then the next car pulls up. Is there a problem here? You're like, you're not involved in this. I've just been goodwilling for less. Yeah, I don't. People get pulled over.
I need more backstory on this. Like, it's the worst. You get pulled over and then like seven cops pull their gun on you. It's just so annoying.
What are you doing? Story? Right, like, right. There's probably more of the story. Yeah. There is a text limit, a character limit. all right. this is 630. Just, hey, guys, just a point of clarification. You don't have to be a funeral director to move the body. I have an uncle who used to go up to northern Wisconsin and bring down bodies. All right.
Yeah, any employee can check it out and, you know, just deliver it, you know, as needed.
Okay, so from that one, we'll go to another one. 708. Yeah. The worst is McDonald's, especially during with the hash browns.
Almost definitely.
They don't like that breakfast menu.
262. The worst is when your power goes out, but your neighbors is still on, and then they ask, did you pay the bill? that sounds terrible.
Did you?
All right, let's see. All right. 847. You know what's the worst? Those little stickers they put on fresh fruit that are impossible to remove.
I mean, I tend bars, so I take off like 85 of those a day. So, I mean, calm down, friend. You have no idea, okay?
You just need to, it's a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get better at it. Jeez. Yikes. I don't know about that one. Okay, I'll read this one. But I don't think this is funny, but it is the worst. 773 says, you know what's the worst? My husband, a Chicago fire lieutenant, died 3 years ago from West Nile from a mosquito bite. And now my son's destination wedding is going to be a bust because no one is attending because of the mosquito causing Zika virus. That is the worst.
I mean,
right? Technically, that's the worst. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not all jokes.
Maybe a different destination is a good
idea. Yeah, I was going to say, and maybe do it indoors.
Mosquitoes have ruined this woman's life twice.
Yeah. I feel bad for you. I'm sorry. Yeah. That is the worst. 773 lightens the mood. You know what's the worst? When you find out the suggested serving on your one a day gummy vitamin is two gummies.
Just make a bigger gummy.
It's really good. Like, yeah, that's the worst. I've been doing it wrong this whole time. 815. The worst is being a mechanic's wife. Okay. you might need a little bit more.
Because of all the Astrovans with the dead bodies in the back?
Right, like, I guess, man. I don't know what that's about. That might be... I'll bet maybe we could do a big segment on how tough it is to be a mechanic's wife. I don't know. I don't have that intel.
Seems more like a novel.
Yeah. 414's got a good gardening one. Planting tulips. You know what's the worst? Planting tulips for years, and then they don't come up because the squirrels eat the bugs off before they flower.
I would imagine that's bad if you're a gardener.
Would you say bugs or buds?
I think it's buds. I think
all
it
right.
might be.
Because
bugs on that here, but more, I think it's buds in reality. 847 says the worst is when you finally find a parking space, but the people leaving are taking forever, even though they see you waiting with more cars behind you. That is the worst. Like when you're like, what are you doing, man?
There's two theories on that, in my opinion. You know, I sort of feel it's like I'm of the opinion I never wait for anyone because I don't know how long they're going to take. I don't know if there's kids in that car. Like, to me, that's a mystery box.
Yeah.
And I just move on and I find another spot.
That's a good philosophy. That's a philosophy of life thing, though. You're like, you know what? I'm not going to sweat this, man.
Yeah. So I feel like that's you putting your own schedule on those people.
Right.
You know, and
but there's also a common courtesy
from.
Of like, if you're moving, move. Like you're walking on the sidewalk.
That's true. I wouldn't
like,
I wouldn't be like, oh, you know what? I actually like coffee better than tea now and have a conversation with my passenger before I leave.
And it depends on the volume. Like if you're talking about the Crate and Barrel parking lot on North Avenue where it's just, or a Whole Foods parking
lot. You should
lot
expect
where you're just
it
like,
to be terrible.
Go.
Yeah, yeah,
go.
Yeah.
Don't stop. Don't adjust your mirrors. Like get out of that spot. Like in Chicago, I can understand that because you're right. I mean, there.
It's like, don't turn your car on and put it in reverse with the lights on until you're ready to go. That signals I'm leaving now.
Do that, then you sync the Bluetooth to your radio.
There has to be sitting in their car, like you don't have to come or go, and none of your business.
Because
if you're like loaded, then you should get moving. You know,
I have three kids under the age of five, and there will be sometimes though people wait, and I will just let them know. I'm like, listen, you're welcome to wait there. but I want you to know I am strapping people in. Like, one of my kids has just got naked. Like, I don't know how long this is going to take.
That's totally
but
true.
Sean, so, like,
he's got a naked
that.
Kid.
As someone who'd be waiting with, if I see anyone loading kids in,
yeah.
I'm like, nah, you know what? I'm not going to rush them. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I tell them, like, you're fine to wait there. I'm gonna do my best, but I just want you to know I don't know what I'm getting into here.
So I would flip the script and say the worst is the people who rush people who have to load kids into a car.
I feel like the worst is your crazy naked kid, though. I would like you to talk about this. It's amazing.
Right. They'll get loose sometimes, you know, with the self-opening doors and, you know.
Can I tell the story real quick about Sean's crazy naked kid? Sure. So I've been to Sean's house one time because I had a projector blow, and Sean, as a very nice friend, lent me one for the show I was doing. So I show up to his house. And, like, come in. He's like, oh, here's my wife. Here's my kid. Where's my crazy son? And he goes, well, Declan's the crazy one, right?
Yeah,
well, let me, Declan, are you decent? And he just yells, I'm decently naked, and runs out of his room naked, like, and Sean's chasing him, trying to grab him.
That's a strong bit.
Yeah.
Kids just get, I mean.
Kids got some timing.
Well, yeah, and they're like drunks. So they just get naked if you lose them. I mean, you know, they just emerge naked, you know?
All right, let's go to the calls. Let's go to Peggy. Peggy, what's the worst, Peggy?
Oh, the worst is when somebody's coughing on the train for an hour and 18-minute ride from Union Station to Big Timber. They don't cover their, you know, with their mouth or their elbow. They cough into the aisle like that's okay.
They're just trying to share.
You're right. The loud coughing fit on any sort of closed mode of transportation is the worst.
Uh-huh.
I don't take that train. I know exactly what you're talking about because I have taken that Metra train. I would say even the worst is the CTA bus. That's what I take.
Uh-huh.
And you get shoulder to shoulder like in a rush hour and someone starts doing that. You're just like, this is the beginning of World War Z. Like, we all know we're going down at this point.
I feel like the peeing is worse on the CTA.
Yeah.
Honestly. The coughing is disgusting and hugely discourteous, but the peeing and the other
peeing is the worst.
You know, touching of yourself is worse than the... coughing, but the coffee is horrible. I
will say this.
Peggy.
I like that Chicagoans.
Bye-bye.
I like that Chicagoans just brave it. You know what I mean? And this is part of our life. I've never respected the guy that wears, like, the Japanese surgery mask and everything. It's like, come on, dude. I mean, it's winter in Chicago.
I have such curiosities about that. Is that like a phobia thing, or do they?
I don't know.
I'm always curious.
Are you protecting yourself against germs out there?
Vice versa, it's meant to actually be a courteous thing where you do it because, like, oh, I've got a cough,
so
I'm gonna wear this so I don't spread it to everybody else.
Yeah, that's
which
what I
is actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
But you still look like a jamoke. You know,
you do look like a jamoke.
Yeah.
It's a great word, by the way. 312-981-7200. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get to the news. We'll come back. More of the worst here on the download. Stay with us.
It's going down, y'all.
All right, welcome back to The Worst here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. 312-981-7200. We're giving away awesome prizes tonight. We're going to do that in about 10 minutes. We got such great texts and people waiting on the line. I appreciate you playing tonight. Let's get right to the people on the line. Let's go to Catherine. Catherine, all right, what's the worst, Catherine?
The worst is when you work at a grocery store and you're closed up, the light's off, you put, like, up your sign, and you're closing down your register. You want to go on break or you're going home, and you turn around and someone has still managed to has started to load their groceries onto the belt.
And they're all exasperated.
They're
like, oh, finally an open register. And you're like, I'm not open. You're like, and then do they give you attitude?
Yeah, that's the worst. And they like make you feel bad, or they like make you afraid that you're like, they're going to like report you or something. I'm like, hey, I was clearly closed.
I worked in a grocery store, and I know that feeling. And it's the worst when you close, when the manager comes over and says, you can close, but you have somebody.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And then you flip the light off, but the next person only sees that you're ringing somebody out. And so they're like, and so you have this constant, I'm sorry. And when I worked in grocery stores in the day, they had the wobbly, this lane is closed thing that you would put on the end of the, so it was like a Marlboro thing or like it was sponsored.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, did you not see that really gross gray thing on the end that says you can't be here?
Yeah, but it's like no matter what you do, there's always someone who's like, oh, I didn't see. I'm like, oh, Lord.
Oh, well, thanks, Catherine. That's great. That's a good one. All right, let's do Liz. Liz, what's the worst, Liz?
Well, the worst, and I'm going to sound like a really bad parent, and I'm sorry. I apologize. But as me and my son are driving the car, and windows were down, but I had, you know, well, they weren't down all the way. They were like halfway, three quarters way up. And it started to rain. I was rolling them up, and it's, Mom, Mom, my hand. His hand was in the window, and I freaked out. And, well, I hit the wrong button. Down then?
What'd you do then?
And, yeah, his finger ended up being all the way in the window.
The worst.
It was not good.
No, yeah, I'm with you, Liz, on that. I would say what you want to say in that one is the worst is when you crush
when you sever your kid's finger is probably not a good day.
And the worst part was I was laughing.
She might be mayor someday, though, so that's crying. Cool.
I know the story. I know this. Thanks, Liz. That was great. I know the story because my mom one time had my son. Like for a week or for a night to go to dinner or something like that, and he slammed his finger in the door.
Oh yeah,
and it was all black and blue, and it was a bad night, and he was crying. This whole thing, I felt bad for her, and but then it's also been a great joke because every time I see her, I'm like, hey, don't slam my kid's.
Don't break his hand. Yeah,
kind of works.
My mom closed my little brother's door in like entire arm in the door one time.
Oh yeah, well I grew up. I'm the oldest of six, and we grew up in like one of those 1980s A-team vans, and I can't tell you how many times my dad would just get a rolling start on that van and almost just like cut an arm off at the shoulder just at full speed. Yeah, I mean like nothing was like childproof back then. I mean like I'm sure it would hurt like for those automated windows to close, but that's like what is that coming up at? Like,
yeah, right.
You know, I mean,
you can also that usually if something's blocking,
maybe the kid got some reflexes after.
Yeah, like now modern doors and everything sense. That's like burp, burp, burp.
There's all right, let's get through some of these. 224. You know what's the worst? It's going on two long walks, 3 miles each, working out, running a crap ton of errands, and checking your Fitbit to see how you ended your day, only to realize that the battery has likely been dead for most of that time.
So having a Fitbit is the worst thing. Yeah. I agree.
773 says it's the worst when I parked at O'Hare long-term parking a few years back when one of those bird flu outbreaks was hitting China. The tram stopped at the international terminal first, and a plane load of people wearing masks got on the tram joining us. All right. That is the worst. 773 says, you know what's the worst? The word rad.
It's awful. Worse like than Mondo, one. Maybe. Yeah, I think like Mondo might be worse, but rad's pretty terrible.
That's pretty good. All right.
That's a rad worst.
The worst is having to clean out your gutters. Yeah, that's true. That is the worst. I've never done it. The worst, maybe that's why, maybe I got to do that as a homeowner. 630, the worst is when you're shoveling snow up to your buns. I changed it. It was a different word.
It's like fanny?
Yeah. You just get done. Your neighbor pulls out his industrial snowblower and does everything, everyone else's snow. Okay. The worst is you finally make it into the restroom and the toilet's not working. The worst is when motorcyclists stupidly weave in and out of traffic. That's true. I hate that.
That's actually pretty safe depending on the situation.
Oh, you're a motorcycle
like
guy?
No, not at all. I was actually a Vespa guy back in the day because I'm super tough.
I was going to say, you kind of look like a Vespa guy. Definitely. Yeah, no, I would have pegged you for one.
It's the Romanesque profile and the 12-year-old girl frame. Yeah. So, like, no, if there's a lot of traffic, and then you zip in and out, it actually makes stuff go faster when you go up to the front. It's not legal in Illinois, but in California and other states, it's
you see it in California all the time, right?
You know?
The worst is being a delivery driver and having to act all grateful and then tell them no problem, have a nice day to the person who just stiffed you on a tip.
Do you have to do that?
I would argue you don't have to do that.
Yeah, although, I don't do that.
You don't have to do that. Yeah. That's not, the worst is having to do that. Think you have to do that. Let's go to Susan. Susan, what's the worst, Susan?
I went to a new local coffee shop today and ordered a coffee, and the person who gave it to me wiped their nose before they gave it to me. Then the manager said, I'd like to introduce you to our new employee, and she took the same hand and shook my hand.
Oh, man.
You should have spit in your hand before she shook
it. That's more of a lawsuit than too much ice and coffee if you saw that. Thanks, Susan. I appreciate that. All right. And finally, the worst is getting pulled over on your birthday. Because you didn't use your signals, then having the trooper say happy birthday as he hands you your ticket.
Oh, so he recognized it.
What a mook.
Oh,
what a mook.
That is bad.
Officer mook.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a look real quick at what we got. I want to read these. I think we've got it. We've got it written down here. I've got the top three. I also want to thank our panelists who are great tonight. Sean Flannery.
Yes.
He does the Blackout Diaries every Saturday night at the Hi-Hat.
That's correct. 8 p.m., $10.
All right, Mike Polino's the owner of the Hi-Hat. Mike, what else? What? Give me one more show we should see at the Hi-Hat.
You know, can I give you like two?
Give you two.
All right. So all right. Every Monday we have a Sad Sax and Wisecracks hosted by Natalie Joves. It's
Natalie's
a great stand-up
great,
showcase. She's fantastic. Also, every Tuesday we have our house band, the Hi-Hat Second Line, which is like a New Orleans-style brass band, 8:30 to 10:30, free show. It's a super fun time.
Now, we could do a whole other segment on your tattoo, but you have a tattoo of...
Of the Malort.
Of the Malort.
Yeah, I'm technically the Malort King of Chicago. I have a
trophy
and everything.
The Malort King of Chicago. If you haven't had Malort, go to Hi-Hat and order it.
Yeah, you
but
should.
That's great that you are the king of the...
Voted the best Malort bar in the world. People say Chicago. We got votes from Sweden, like worldwide, man.
Right.
It was a big deal.
There you go. All right, so let me read these real quick. Just do some business. Okay, so here's what we're giving away. Third, second, and first. Third is a pair of tickets to The Producers, now playing through June 26th at the Mercury Theater Chicago, featuring a riotous mix of eccentric characters and show-stopping songs. The Producers is a spoof on the big, old-fashioned Broadway musical. Get tickets by calling 773-325-1700 or online at mercurytheaterchicago.com. Second place is going to get a $50 gift certificate to Builder Supply Outlet in Broadview. Meet Wendy and Wendy Snyder. And join her for an exclusive after-hour special showing of the Kitchen and Bath Showroom. It's grand opening on May 12th from 6 to 8. Register to attend at WGNradio.com/events. And number one is a pair of tickets to the soccer match between Bayern Munich and AC Milan at Soldier Field on July 27th. See the world's best soccer back in Chicago in one of Europe's fiercest rivalries. Get tickets online at International Championship Cups. Cup. Let me do it again. InternationalChampionsCup.com. All right. Number three, I'm going to find it because I have it on here. I just need to get the find this. All right. All right. We like this one a lot. Number three is from Jennifer. Jennifer says, when you're texting with a friend and you already have two different conversations because of the lag, then your friend drops a bombshell and you have to delete everything you just typed because it would be rude not to respond to that the right way. Right?
That was great.
Yeah.
All right, good. So, Jennifer, congratulations. You are going to see The Producers. Number two, we're going to give it to Kevin and the mechanic with the dead body in the back. Yeah, Kevin, I like that one a lot. Yeah. That was good. And we were, and you know what? It'd probably be number one if it was a little bit more relatable, because I don't think anyone else is in that
situation.
Yeah, like
if we drew Crown Vic instead of an Astro Man.
Yeah, right. You get number one.
You know how that goes, you know?
All right, and we also wanted to say that we kind of, out of the goodness of our heart, wanted to give all the prizes to the woman who seemed to be just chased by the mosquitoes. You know, first West Nile affected her life, and now Zika's affecting her life. But she said she didn't want any prizes, so that was nice and terrible.
Send her some off, maybe.
Yeah.
Or something?
So well, we should. Jeez,
mosquito net.
Here at WGN, we say keep your head up on that one. All right, so. All right, let's go to number one. Let's go to number one. Number one is pretty, pretty simple. It is from Nicole. Nicole is on the line with us, and she says the worst is the word rad. Love it. Nicole, you there?
That's pretty awful.
I'm here.
Nicole, congratulations. You're the winner tonight. You're going to go to a soccer match at Soldier Field on July 27th.
It's pretty rad, huh?
Thank you. I'm stoked. I'm kidding. That should be on the list too.
Why do you hate the word rad?
I think it's probably biological. It's safe to say I'll never marry a surfer.
Good.
That's how I feel about the Irish, I dig.
Similar, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
You nailed it with the simplicity. The word rad. So you win. So, Nicole, thanks for playing and thanks for calling in. And thanks to everybody who called in, who texted tonight. Thanks to Sean and Mike as well for being here, you guys. Another great The Worst here on The Download. We'll be back next Monday.
Thanks for having
us, man.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks, man. All right, tonight was a big night in Chicago. The James Beard Awards took place at the Civic Opera House. We've been waiting all week. Last week, we had a huge week of chefs nominated who came on the show to talk about their craft. Now, let's see if they actually won. Louisa Chu, who writes for the Trib section at the Chicago Tribune, was there. She joins us now. Louisa, how did Chicago fare? How did it go?
Chicago did pretty well. I mean, won 3 awards and a really big award. So maybe we should start with the first award that Chicago
yep.
won.
What do we got?
That was Chef Curtis Duffy, chef owner of Grace Restaurant, who won Best Chef Great Lakes.
Mm.
And he was here with his daughters, Ava and I forget his other daughter's name. I'm so sorry. but they were his dates for the night. And so terrific, so sweet. And that was a big deal. I mean, because a lot of people thought that he was going to win last year and finally brought it back home to Chicago this year. And then the second big award for Chicago was the Land and Sea Department that won for Best Restaurant Design 75 seats and over
right.
for the new Cherry Circle Room.
In the Athletic, yeah.
Exactly, that big new Chicago Athletic Association Hotel, which is gorgeous. And I was asking them what, for guys who have like access to some of the most gorgeous restaurants in the city where they're going to go to celebrate, I'm like Big Star Tacos. Okay. All right. So, which was, I was asking chefs where they're going to celebrate. That was a common answer. So there's going to, everybody wants to spot the celebrity chefs go there tonight.
Right.
And the big award for best restaurant, outstanding restaurant, was a guest that you had on recently. It was for Alinea Restaurant.
All right.
Owner Nick Kokonis, Chef Grant Ackett. This was the first year that they were actually eligible. The restaurant has to be open for at least 10 years. And the funny thing is that the restaurant's currently closed for remodeling. And I actually got a chance to see a preview of the new restaurant, which is, as Nick had said, it really was a lot more like they didn't just paint and change the curtains. I mean, they completely moved walls around. And one of the big deals about that, which you can see a preview on our Facebook page at Chicago Tribune Food, is a preview of their new kitchen table.
Hmm.
That's a big deal because they had not, Chef Grant Ackett, when he first opened Alinea, it said he did not want a kitchen table in his restaurant, and guess
now
what? 10 years later, yeah, he's got
they
one
evolved.
There.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the Great Lakes category because that was a category that Erling Wubauer was in, Lee Wolin, the guys. It was all Chicago. It was everybody that was in that category was Chicago chef. But Curtis Duffy, and we kind of previewed it earlier, kind of stands out with Grace. It was the only restaurant that was at that caliber, and I don't mean, which is the best restaurant, but Grace is definitely at a different caliber than, say, Fat Rice or some of the others.
It really is. I mean, and all great chefs, all great restaurant teams, but Grace Restaurant is a Michelin 3-star restaurant,
mm-hmm.
which is awarded for restaurants worldwide for a very extraordinary level of food, service, design. I mean, it's the kind of place that it's, typically if for Michelin Guide, as well as, I mean, really he stands apart. You're totally right that this is a destination restaurant. It's the kind of restaurant that people will fly from around the world to and have dinner for one night and fly out. I mean, it's that kind of level of restaurant. And, yeah.
No, but let me ask you, a lot of people over the weekend that I saw were complaining about last year's event, just saying it was so long. It was like 4 hours, this, that, and the other. How did it seems like this one went a little faster and they may have learned from a little bit of last year's festivities.
It was wrapping at 8:59 on the dot.
Wow.
And I got to say, that it's a big deal in chef and, well, restaurant, cook culture, that when you call time, when you have got these sort of delicate timing issues with really expensive food products, your timing has got to be down. And so this year, I think that a lot of the chefs who are really used to having that sort of experience in their everyday life, I think they really appreciated that when they say 2 minutes, it's 2 minutes. When they say it's 3 hours, it was done in 3 hours.
Okay. Well, a great night for Chicago, and this is good that, the James Beards are here in Chicago, but a big week of festivities. Tonight they wrap up with the after parties, as you mentioned, Big Star. If you want to see celebrity chefs, they're hanging out in Big Star in Wicker Park. But that, I would say, with the wrapping up this year, that it seemed to go off without a hitch, and the James Beards here in Chicago was a success.
It was a success, and I have to say that I think that James Beard now kind of kicks off a big season. I mean, just as we're starting to have that transition in weather, I mean, I was talking to some of the chefs who are looking forward to coming back for Chicago Gourmet, for example, and not to mention, of course, all of the different festivals during the summer. Mm-hmm. So it kicks off a really big season of big food events that happen in the city.
Well, there you go. Chicago really sets itself as the number one culinary city in America tonight with the James Beards here at the Civic Opera House. Louisa Chu is a food reporter for the Chicago Tribune. She joins us here on the show talking about chewing. Louisa, before we go, you know, a big passing right this weekend during the James Beards of Burt Katz and his pizza legacy. You were friends with Burt, and the condolences, but this was a loss for the culinary community.
It really was. I mean, I'm so happy that you also had a chance to talk to Burt. Burt Katz, the pizza maker, the force behind Burt's Place Pizza in Morton Grove, that was kind of made famous with a visit from Anthony Bourdain that I got a chance to join in on. But Burt Katz celebrated 52 years in the pizza business and was really extraordinary and leaves behind a legacy that lives on, not only in some of the pizzas that kind of, you know, the generations behind him, but also just in the postings that I've seen on his Facebook and Twitter pages that I started for him. I mean, thousands of comments of people, just how much he touched their lives. And what was so amazing was not only his work as a pizza, but that he lived a pretty amazing full life, all the way from his around the world road trip in a truck that he bought in Japan when he and his wife were 24, 25 years old. So it was terribly sad that we lost Burt and his amazing pizza, but he lived, if we all could live a fraction of the life that he lived, we'd be so lucky.
Yeah. Louisa Chu, food writer for the Chicago Tribune, covering the James Beards tonight, talking about the passing of Burt Katz. Louisa, talk soon.
Thanks, Justin.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the impulsive hearts are in studio with me, ready to rock out here in the Allstate Showcase studio. There's already a crowd outside. It's when the crowd sees guitars, they always stick around. The band is the brainchild of Danielle Sines. Sines is songwriter and frontwoman for the guitar-driven pop trio. I see John's not here, but Dan Julian plays percussion. Dan is here. Danielle Sines is also here. They got a show at the Red Line Tap in Rogers Park on the 11th. And big news, just announced that they will be playing the Taste of Chicago this year. How about that? Woohoo! They are joining us in studio. Danielle, Dan, good to see you. Thanks for being here. All right, so let's talk about this. I say guitar-driven pop trio. What do you think of that? I mean, I was trying to think of how to classify or categorize the music that you're producing.
I mean, that makes total, complete sense to me. That's what we're going for most of the time. I mean, other than Dan, I play keys and I also play a little bit of accordion that's on the record, but it's completely impossible to replicate myself in that many ways. And John plays bass and guitar and saxophone. So, I mean, it's the kind of same thing for him. Yeah.
Let me, quick, before we get to the music, I mean, I'm always interested in how a band, especially a band that when I read, you know, that this is really an outgrowth of your work, you know, you mm-hmm. tried solo work, you didn't really like it. Yeah. But how you record, because, you know, there's do you bring the stuff in and then say, here's what I want you guys to do? How collaborative is the process with Impulsive Hearts?
For us, I think it's very collaborative. I think that without each of the individual members, we would have a completely different band and it would have a completely different sound. So for us, it's a huge collaborative process. Like John and Dan and I have been in a band in some form since college, so we've been friends for a very long time. So to be able to do this with them means a lot more in some ways,
right?
Because we've been friends for such a long time. And it makes me happy, I don't know, prideful, all of those sorts of things, to be able to say that they're equal collaborators.
I would also think there'd be a shorthand as well. If you guys have been performing together for a while, it makes it a lot easier to sort of make corrections or to edit songs or work together in that form.
Yeah, I think it's easier to say something to one another and not have the other person take offense or, you know, like leave the band, other such things. Like, we've had a lot of dramatic moments just because we've been friends for such a long time that we've been able to work through, so it's nice in that way. Dan can fill in all the other secrets of this, though. So,
Dan, I think the
secret, yeah, so many secrets.
Sure,
yeah, right.
Well, it'll be hard to hear you, Dan, just because you're behind the set here. Why don't we play some music? Then I'll ask you about the Taste of Chicago, because that's going to be a big gig for you guys. The Impulsive Hearts are in studio with me here on the Download. What's the song we're going to hear?
Save Yourself.
Save Yourself. All right, Save Yourself, the Impulsive Hearts. Yes. That's going to be jacked up for Monday night.
Good. That's what I try.
The Impulsive Hearts in studio here on the Download. Danielle Sines and Dan Julian on drums. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll hear some more live music and talk about the Taste of Chicago. It's the Download. Stay with us. All All right, so download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're going till 11. Then pretty late with Patty Vasquez takes over. Patty is in Los Angeles. She'll do the show from there, which is awesome. Coming up tomorrow, got a good show tomorrow. Alicia Tate's going to be with me, a longtime, I guess, academic here in town. We talk about her new study on the gender gap. So we're going to talk with Alicia Tate coming up tomorrow on the program. Also, Mike Fouché will be here, as well as Josh Mogerman from NRDC. We're going to talk about bomb trains.
What is that?
There's a thing that's happening now where crude oil tankers are coming through Chicago, like very close to downtown into neighborhoods. They crisscross because they're coming in from Canada, because this is the rail capital of the world. But what they're carrying, if there was a derailment, could blow up a city neighborhood.
Ooh. Oh,
wow. Yeah, so
that's important.
Bomb train. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Good. The Impulsive Hearts are in studio. Danielle Sines and Dan Julian are here. John Paul is not, but the two of you are here. The guitar-driven pop trio. We just heard some music. We're going to hear one more song before the end. You guys have a show at the Red Line Tap, which I love that place, up in Rogers Park, the old Heartland crew there. But you're playing Taste of Chicago.
True.
I just have a question about when you play a stage like that. And I've been down there and I've seen those stages. And I mean, how do you adjust your set when you play outdoors and you have to play to a different kind of crowd that may not be so captive inside, may be a little bit more, I took the Metro down and I want to see what's happening. Like, how do you change your act, if you do at all, for the stage like that?
I think you just got to come at them strong right out of the gate and just hope for the best.
Wow them. Yeah. That's, I think, our attack approach.
A lot of people there just hanging out, watching music, eating great food, and there's going to be so many other things that they can be doing, so we just got to
grab their attention, right?
We'll be right before Billy Idol, so I feel like there will be some people that are there for us that will then gravitate over to Billy Idol, I just have to be okay with, because there's a part of me that's also... wouldn't mind
gravitating
there. Yeah, no, I mean, like, it would be nice to be doing both, but you know, no, but I would like Billy Idol to gravitate towards us too,
right?
So that would be nice.
That could happen, right?
I don't know, we'll see. Well, I would like to,
you know, I'd read the piece that Jessica Hopper did on you guys in the Tribune a while back about, you know, your recording process, you know, not being so, I guess, like, not just stopping. Like, you guys, you know, did some stuff in the studio, and you said maybe that's not the sound that you want.
Yeah.
You want to switch it up, maybe do some stuff live, use that. Talk about your recording process, because you guys record yourselves. So
So when I recorded in the studio, it was so, I think for me, anxiety-provoking that I wanted to be a bit more in control of the whole process, and also... be able to kind of navigate our sound. And like, I remember being in the studio and not really loving the way that my guitar was sounding and not having any real tools to change it. And I think that was a big part for me of just wanting to do something a little bit different. And I think that a big piece is because John is in Northern Michigan, it helps us to kind of build, opposed to being like, this is our only shot to do this, but to say, okay, well, here's like a good beginning, and then we're going to continue on that. And maybe even later say, you know, I heard this crazy thing in my head that I would really like to record, and have the opportunity to actually do it, because we have a little bit
more. And that's
the
collaborative process you're talking about, being able to send stuff back and forth and do that. It seems like the new norm here for music.
Yeah,
it's
really kind of lovely in its own self, because we are able to kind of be in constant communication without being, I think, annoying for the most part. I mean, I think I'm fairly annoying. I send probably like 5 emails a day for like band-related things, and I'm just Yeah, on a good day. There's like some days that we go into... I was reflecting on some of the rants where I was just like, man, we went on a tangent here and we didn't get anything done, actually.
Well, that's good, though. Sometimes you need those kind of...
Yeah. No.
The Impulsive Hearts are in studio. Danielle Sines and Dan Julian are here. You guys want to play another one? What's the name of the track?
This is called Come On.
Come On?
Yeah.
All right. Come On. Is it off of Sorry in the Summer?
It's off of Sorry in the Summer.
Sorry in the Summer is the record that was put out in February, March by the Impulsive Hearts. Dan Julian on drums here. Danielle Sines is going to be a guitar and singing. All right, come on here on the download. Let's hear it. Mm-hmm. Pulse of Hearts in studio with me, Danielle Sines and Dan Julian. They're playing in the Red Line Tap on the 11th, May 11th, but they're also playing Taste of Chicago right before Billy Idol.
Right before Billy Idol.
Thanks so much for coming out, you guys, and thanks for the live music. We appreciate it. Well, that's going to do it tonight here on The Download. Great live music, great show tonight. Everything about it from the beginning to the end, really strong stuff. So we thank you very much for listening to the show. The Worst was very impressive. You guys came through tonight, so I appreciate it.